Let's try this again.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. It is Friday, oddly enough, curiously named. And I'm Bob. It's the fourth day of March. We are at the close of the first, nearly the first full week of March here on the Horn. And, you know what Friday on the Front Porch is about. Hopefully a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more conversational. Everything's fair game. Bring anything to the table that you want to. And your opportunity just to sort of drive the agenda, if you will. We are live on Ustream. I'm not at all comfortable about that. I'm not a video kind of guy. But just for those who kept saying, we want video, Bob, we want video. Why? I do not know. But, yes, there is video, although it's kind of soft focusy, I have to admit, because in the main, I haven't found the interface for the controls for this stupid webcam yet. It's somewhere on this machine, but it's probably named, well, God only knows. It's in some file that's not named what it ought to be named. But we're there. For as long as I can stand it, we're there. Last night was rather heavy, and I was pretty worn out by the time it was over because, like I told you, I got a flu shot and started having flu-like symptoms naturally. I seem to be somewhat better, but I'm still, man, little tiny itsy-bitsy needles, but I feel like somebody shot me with a high-caliber firearm right in the arm. Really, really sore. Nasty. And by the way, if you're watching the video, you'll note that, yeah, I've got a cigar fired up. It is the next to last of the Cubans, and it would appear that the next to the last of the Cubans was getting a little bit dry. But that's okay. It's still pretty nice. And let's see, before we do jump into everything, a couple of other notes. We closed last night having raised $80 of the $400 we need to raise by week's end. The week will formally end on Monday, so I guess that buys us a little bit more time. But no, we had a couple of people jump in with and filled spots for members of the Thrifty 250. And all told, we went from needing 40 members of the Thrifty 250 to needing only 32. Now, there's got to be 32 folks out there with $10 in their pocket. Because that's, well, never mind. I'll leave it to other people to describe why it matters. But the fact of the matter is, it's what it takes to keep all of this on. And 32 folks, $10 a piece, works out to less than 5 cents per hour of programming once you factor in everything that goes into the programming. And, as Pete Townsend once wrote, I call that a bargain, the best I ever had. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Sparky. Glad you like the shirt. It's not freezing outside anymore, and yeah, maybe time to haul out the Hawaiian shirt duds if I can manage to not burn a hole in it. Where do we go on this Friday on the Front Porch? Well, I received something, I received something from both. I received the same thing from both Maura and Jude. They are apparently on a wavelength, whether they realize it or not. I received a video, really disturbing video. You know who Randall Terry is? Randall Terry is one of those the fascist phony followers of Jeebus who made it his life's work to torment women trying to go to the doctor and get their bodies taken care of. He will tell you that he's the founder of Operation Rescue. What he won't tell you is that Operation Rescue had to go into bankruptcy in order to hide from a massive judgment against it brought by the people it had tortured. Of course, now that we have the Westboro Baptist decision from the Supreme Court of the United States, maybe that judgment wouldn't have been rendered. Because, remember, with the Westboro Baptist decision, all you have to do is say, I was torturing him for Jeebus, and you can get away with anything. Even the intentional infliction of emotional distress. This is a video from Washington, D.C. It's from Lafayette Square, Lafayette Park, there in front of the White House. And it's a bunch of these phony baloney followers of Satan who think they're following Christ, including Randall Terry, who inexplicably, or perhaps explicably, I'm not sure, but inexplicably, I would say, is wearing a full-on mink coat. Really. Now, is it a real mink or a faux fur? I don't know. You know, where's a member of PETA with a bucket of blood when you need him? But Randall Terry explains to the audience, why they're there. And then he goes to, and what's this guy's name? Can't recall it right off the top of my head. The creep who wanted to burn Qurans in Florida. Somebody will email me. They're there to make sure that America doesn't start a following the Sharia law. And they announce that they are going to, that they're going to put the Quran on trial.
Various government officials, they chose to not do that, but they're going to now put the Quran on trial. Tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, on March the 20th, we have declared March the 20th International Judge the Quran Day. Last September, with International Burn the Quran Day, many people felt that was very unfair. The Quran will be put on trial. If found guilty, the Quran will be punished. The Quran will either be drowned, the Quran will be burned, the Quran will be shredded, or the Quran will face a firing squad.
How medievally Christian of him! The Quran will be drowned, burned, shredded, or face a firing squad. What? Can't they hang the Quran?
Hanging's too good for 'em.
Yeah. They are completely deprived of the irony gene, apparently, these right-wing fascists. They're going to put the Quran on trial, never realizing, of course, that the Quran is a thing and not a person. But that doesn't really slow them down, does it?
So with this, we are challenging the Muslims that if the Quran is really a book of peace, then come on March the 20th and prove to us that it's a book of peace. If not, then it is the violent, destructive book that we claim it is.
Yeah, okay, I'm sure some Muslims are going to want to hang out with a bunch of violent fascists like you. Then again, maybe the response would be to put the Bible on trial. We could do that. I know several non-believers who would be more than happy. Well, among other things, it's established now as a matter of statistical fact that non-believers actually know the Bible better than believers do, and as a consequence of that, would be in a far better position to serve as a prosecutor, if you will. So, maybe that's March 20th, did they say? March 20th? March 20th is Put the Quran on Trial Day. Well, how's about we declare March 20th Put the Bible on Trial Day, too? Because all of that stuff that was done to the various and sundry peoples all throughout the Old Testament, the torturing, the tormenting, the killing of the men, women, children, beasts of the field, all of that stuff in there, that's pretty hateful. We can put that, because that's the point, you know, that the Quran is filled with hate. Well, so is the Bible. Absolutely full of hate. For every verse you might pull out of the Quran that is held up as hateful, you can find one equally so within the Bible, especially the Old Testament. Within the New Testament, the letters of Paul are full of misogyny, arguably homophobia, general bigotry against freedom, because after all, Paul acknowledges that God wants there to be slaves in the world. All kinds of options. So I suggest we put the Bible on trial. Maybe we should do that with a program one evening. Maybe some Moran Monday, we should nominate the Bible as the chief Moran and just spend a Moran Monday program, 3 solid hours, of hauling out bigoted, hateful, bloodthirsty, sometimes genocidal verses from the Bible. Read them in context, because we don't want our good Christer friends saying you took it out of context. We don't want that. So maybe, you know what? Wait a minute. Hang on. Let me look here. Stand by. Come on. Cooperate, will you? There it is. No, that's okay. Here we go. March the 20th. Son of a gun, it's a Sunday. Well, we can make that work still. We can still make that work. Because that would mean March the 21st is a Monday. And shall we? Shoot me some email. This will have to be a collective effort. I'm not going to do this all by myself. You want to put the Bible on trial? But, of course, we're liberals, so we won't impose the death penalty. We'll just exile the Bible if it's convicted. We'll exile the Bible to the faraway realm of fantasy and superstition. We don't want to shoot it. We don't want to drown it. We don't want to burn it. We don't want to shred it. We'll just exile it to the dustbin of history, where it has belonged for so many years, decades, centuries, millennia. What do you think? Shoot me an email, Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, Bob Kincaid, @gmail.com. Well, trust Jim to cut to the heart of the matter. What? Randall Terry in a mink coat? Is he cruising Lafayette Square with a bear flag? More insanity and rote stupidity, says Jim. No sense of fashion, I guess. Not gonna touch it. Can't make me. Ain't gonna. But this goes on. This video goes on. And, you know, one of these days, probably after we hit the lottery, we're going to have a gizmo in here that'll let me show you video as well, you know, when we're doing Ustream. It'll let me show you video as well as playing you audio. And when that happens, we'll be able to watch things like this together. But for now, it's audio only. And this video goes on for 14 minutes and 7 seconds. And it gets much nastier. Because there's an individual who hangs out near the White House who happens to be Muslim. And he prays. And he's right there smack dab in the middle of all of these rabid, frenzied, right-wing servants of Satan. I would say that he was in considerable danger. You'll see why. Let's see. Let's move up a little bit in the video. Let's see. I made a note here. Yeah, let's... It won't take a second. Here we go. Nope, too far. There, that'll work.
Oh, there, Allah's the devil. Allah's his devil. That's his God.
Allah's the devil.
The God of darkness.
Allah's the devil.
You getting this? Allah is the devil, and they're talking about this Muslim man who isn't bothering anyone. Allah is the devil. That's his God. His God is the devil. Oh, it gets worse.
He is Satan, not America. Allah is Satan.
As we know, Islam operates with fear and intimidation. And once you stand up with that, stand up to that, and I believe that happened. I believe that radical Islam, or Islam, the religion of fear and intimidation, ran into the American spirit of determination.
Yeah, only one problem. Who's doing the fear and intimidation gig here? Hint, it's not the Muslim. Hint, it wouldn't be the Muslims if there were 100 Muslims there. I doubt if it would be the Muslims if there were 1,000 Muslims there. Again, the irony gene is completely absent from all of these little right-wing the walking hunks of human excrescence. Because otherwise, you couldn't have people screaming, Allah is Satan! His God is the devil! You can, at the same time that this this punk-ass guy that wanted to burn Qurans is sitting there talking about how Islam operates by intimidation. Mind-blowing, isn't it? But this is the kind of thing that makes me worry very, very much about the well-being of my country and yours. Because you know that if these Christers thought nobody was looking, they would have murdered this man and shredded him into a million tiny pieces. Because that's the way Christians are. They have about 1,500 to 2,000 years of history of ripping people into tiny pieces. Because, you see, it's a death cult. It is a cult that worships the murder of its titular leader. They don't worship his life, they worship his death. It's as much of a death cult as anything that ever happened on a pyramid in Central America or at the lip of a volcano in Polynesia. It is a death cult. They worship death. Because this world isn't good enough for them. They want to go on to the next one. And as we heard that evil woman Diana Pauly from Villa Wherever, California last night, screaming that she has a son who knows several Marines who would like to send Muslims to an early meeting in paradise. Murder stays always at the forefront of these Christians' minds. Well, Betsy, I don't disagree. She says, Betsy says, I think that putting any holy book on trial is a bad idea. Don't think it serves any useful purpose, and it will offend. I think it's not only at cross purposes or a bad idea. I think it's also dumb, because you can't put a book on trial, because a book is merely the collected words of human beings. And the human beings whose words they are have shuffled off this mortal coil a long, long time ago. In the book, their ignorance, their fear, their superstition was preserved for the ages. My God, you know, it's one of those things that I think about rather frequently. Why do we have to have the Bible when we don't have all of Sophocles' plays? There are missing histories written in the classical age that are only referred to indirectly by other authors. I would so much rather have those books than the Bible. It's kind of like, I don't know, imagine being 2,000 years from now in the year 4011, and the only thing that's left of this culture are electronic recordings of Baywatch, and you can only hear that once upon a time there was Shakespeare. Imagine if the only thing out there is Girls Gone Wild videos 2,000 years from now, and you only have vague references to, say, Masterpiece Theater. Oh, I did. I proposed to put the Bible on trial, Betsy. But only, you know, it would be an act every bit as stupid as theirs. But it would prove the point that you can cherry-pick anybody's holy book and come to a conclusion, just as they intend to do. I'm schooled in the thing. I could sit down and start thumbing through the Bible and just play hit or miss and find really gross things all over it. You know, that verse where Jesus tells men to go and castrate themselves for God. Ew! It's all over the place. It's all throughout the book. It's hate-filled. It is a hate fest. One could argue that there is far more bad than good in the Bible. And I would be happy to argue that we would be manifestly better off had it not come down to us through the ages. It's like a viral poison that is in our central nervous system, in our spinal fluid, and it just breaks out in the body politic and the body social every so often like cultural shingles and causes nothing but pain. But we're not done with these freaks in front of the White House by any stretch of the imagination. Oh no. Oh no. No, flash forward a little bit. Here we go.
Who said you're safe?
Now, it's hard to hear it over the loud Jesus pop music, but you've got an old white-headed, doughy, pasty-faced white guy who thinks he follows the Prince of Peace. And everywhere that the Muslim man tries to step, this 60-year-old baby says, MySpace! MySpace! You remember being 5 years old and sitting down in a chair and the classroom bully comes over and says, you can't sit there! That's my chair! Right? Well, that's how these fundamentalist Christians are. They are, emotionally speaking, big babies.
Your space, my space.
No. These are hogwash. These are hogwash.
USA! 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 God, wake this man up! Wake him up, Lord! Wake him up!
Buddy, did you notice God didn't wake him up? Now, all the while, the Muslim man is standing there and praying silently. While one guy with a great big furry hat on his head—I don't know if it, I don't know what it was with about fur at this thing—and he's got a big yellow sign with black lit, Jesus saves. Every time I see one of those, I want to stand next to him with a sign that says, "But Moses invests." He's standing there screaming, and this guy in a black leather jacket with wraparound dark glasses, who looks like he's like some sort of Andrew Dice Clay wannabe, pasty-faced, pudgy old doughy guy. Lord, wake him up! Yeah. Yeah, meanwhile, the music continues to play.
He's
and,
on guard. He's asleep. He's wake him up, Lord.
He's on guard.
He's Akbar. I guess that the freak with the Jesus saves sign has been told that that's Jesus saves in Arabic. He's Akbar. I've never heard Arabic with a southern accent before. He's Akbar. But then the thing comes to its culmination when the man does in fact begin to pray. Pray in earnest. Gets down on the ground, gets on his knees, bows over, and prays. Now, I don't want anybody to make the mistake that I think that I'm putting one monotheistic religion ahead of another on this. They all contain profound elements of real silliness. Whether it's eating a cracker and believing it turns into Jesus meat in your belly, or feeling that the only way you can connect with God is to face Mecca, or any of a number of other decidedly silly traditions. But the fact of the matter is, you've got a mass of followers of Christ, and you've got one follower of Allah. We'll leave the philology out of it for a moment to the business about whether El and Al. It's all the same critter because the languages are all kindred. But, you know, why bother? But then, like I said, it reaches its culmination when this man kneels to pray. And when he kneels to pray, the real creepiness
really,
begins.
This is the...
It just answered everything.
So he's kneeling now. He's going to kneel. And these insane followers of Jeebus are going to come completely unglued. By the way, there's a sign in the back that says, "Stoning of women and children is never allowed in America." Odd. They follow a book that says you're supposed to stone disobedient children. And these are biblical literalists who believe that the entire Bible is the literal inspired word of God. So actually, if they ever got their little Bible-based society, stoning would be allowed in America, especially of children and especially of women. That's one of those things we could use in the trial. But anyway, the man is kneeling now, and the right-wing fundies are about to come completely unglued.
Oh, no way, man. No way.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And give us this day our daily bread.
What you're hearing is a totally flipped out, the dried up old prune of a middle-aged lady who, when this man silently bows down to pray, flips out as though she were on acid and begins to hurriedly pray what Roman Catholics refer to as the Pater Noster, the Our Father. And they went to him and asked him, "Lord, when we pray, how shall we pray?" And he said, "Pray in this manner." It's sort of a 2,000-year-old template, if you will. But did you notice this follower of Jebus, she doesn't even know her own prayer? Many of us learned this in Sunday school or whatever, maybe Catholic school, something like that, somewhere along the way. Listen, she doesn't even know her own prayer. Here we go.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And give us this day, forgive our trespasses.
Give us this day our daily bread, and give us a lottery ticket, Lord, a lottery ticket, and forgive us. And so, because this man bowed down to pray, all the weird Christers are going to do the same thing. It's kind of like the Christmas story about the night the animals talked, you know? It's just way too damn much. Did you hear that scream? Jesus! Jesus ain't coming, lady. Well, they're all pretty pudgy, so it stands to reason that the only thing they'd be thinking about would be getting their daily bread.
He doesn't want this going on here right now, where no one is, no one's stopping on his stuff, no one's burning his stuff, no one's shouting, we're going to kill him, or this, or string off, or this, that, and the other thing. No, you had a group of people who, yes, have a different religion come here and pray over the man. Peacefully.
How old are you?
Now, this is a young woman who has a little something to explain to the weirdo fundamentalists.
Well, my son served four deployments in the 82nd Airborne, and he's told me these people want to cut your head off.
These people want to cut your head off.
When you're in the military shooting at them, they do want to cut your head off, not the rest of them.
Okay, you hear all the praise God? All the singing? You hear that little tinkling noise? Yeah, you hear the tinkling noise? Let me play it again. That ain't money. Those are the followers of Jesus throwing the cross, little metal crosses, on the ground at this one lone, solitary individual's feet. They're throwing crosses at his feet. Why? I don't know. Maybe they'd like to crucify him. You never know with a fundy. They get pretty hit up, and then they're not responsible for their actions anymore. It's all God's fault.
There you go.
Take that home with you.
There you go. Take that home with you. Hey, here's a question for you. You've heard these freaks. If you walk through and just did a little survey on other topics, what do you want to bet that 99% of these gomers are teabaggers? Because, well, no, you won't take the bet because you'd lose. Because I'm willing to wager that 100% of them are teabaggers. Take that, will you?
Allah teaches, if you do not submit to Islam, that we are to be killed. We're infidels, we're pigs, we're nothing.
You'll throw it.
Well, he's the pig. I mean, it's just a matter of how you look. I mean, good gracious. Now, they call me crazy, but I haven't seen a lot of people being killed by Muslims for not being Muslim around here lately. Roaming Muslim death squads in the streets? Nah, not so much.
In the ground, so the people, they step on.
Now, this is the man who was praying. And he's got more brains than the rest of all these freaks put together. Listen to his query.
We're nothing.
You throw it in the ground so the people, they step on it? Or
when Jesus shed his blood, you know, people walk on Jesus.
You don't show respect for your own sign. So how come the people
that's
gonna
a symbol.
Show the
that is.
You show no respect for your own sign. Well, gee, people trample on Jesus all the time.
It's not God.
So you're going to be happy if I make
it? Go right ahead, brother.
No, I wouldn't make it.
Because Jesus loves you.
Because this is a free country. I respect you. You have to show a respect for my own religion.
I'm just telling you, Jesus loves you.
Take your sign from the ground.
Do you accept Sharia law?
Why did you pick right here?
Do you accept Sharia law? Do you want Sharia law?
And then the kicker, the punchline. The young lady you heard speaking earlier today, or earlier in the clip, she's going to, she previously said, if you heard it, that she had spent 4 years in the Middle East. She is what we call bilingual. I'm sure some right winger will include that in his Sharia law ban, because that bilingualism, well, we don't need no gay marriage.
Difference I will give.
Okay. Here's a difference I will give you. Listen to this.
Okay. While you guys stood here and harassed him, that man was in Arabic praying a blessing upon all of your family.
And then here's the kicker. It's visual. I'll have to describe it. The thing is wrapping up, and you've got people passing out Israeli flags. And there's some sort of a little monument made of Israeli flags set up on the street. And at the words, sin no more, with no human being near it, the Israeli flags topple and fall upon the ground. Welcome to America. Welcome to the land of religious bigotry. Welcome to the tyranny of the majority. It's frightening, isn't it? Very much so. It gets more frightening when you realize that this, as I noted last night, is an ongoing, multi-state, nationwide, sea-to-shining-sea movement. I hate it when we have these little prophecy moments on the program, but I am, after all, at least on Wednesdays, the arch-pope, imam, elder, chief rabbi, head shaman Bob Kincaid. But you may recall during a conversation with our Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne last week, I told him about the move afoot in Tennessee to declare Sharia law to be treason. Remember, the bill was introduced in both houses of the Tennessee legislature. And I suggested that since Matt was going to be working down on Goat Hill, Montgomery, Alabama, where the legislature meets, he might want to make sure that Alabama doesn't get left behind by Tennessee, because Alabama hates losing to Tennessee. Well, guess what? I'm not proud of this or anything, but the Anniston Star is reporting that State Senator Gerald Allen has introduced a bill in the Alabama legislature to bar Sharia law from the state courts. Now, one reporter went to try to ask Gerald Allen just exactly what constituted Sharia law. His response, well, I don't have my file in front of me. I wish I could answer you better. Here's another little hoot. the definition of Sharia law that exists inside the Alabama bill is the definition of Sharia law that they pulled from Wikipedia. I thought the fundamentalists were mad at Wikipedia. That's why they had to form Conservapedia. Gerald Allen, by the way, is the same sick, twisted freak who introduced a bill. Again, we discussed this with Matt Osborne last week. Introduced a bill in 2005 that would have banned schools and libraries from purchasing or possessing books by gay authors. Of that legislative attempt, Gerald Allen said, "I don't think of it as censorship. There's only one difference, but it is a critical, crucial difference." In 2005, the Repiglican Party did not have sole control of the legislature of the state of Alabama. In 2011, as Matt told you the other night, they do. They have complete control. The Repiglicans in Alabama, for the first time in, I believe, 136 years, have the ability to pass anything they want to through the Alabama legislature. So while the gay book ban in 2005 got stopped, here in 2011, the Sharia law ban will likely pass. So when the reporter asks Gerald Allen again, for a specific example, Gerald Allen says, "Well, go on the internet. Sometime when you got a week to spare, just go on the internet. You'll see." Now, it ain't magic to be able to predict things like this. It's just a matter of knowing the culture. And I know it, perhaps, far too well. Jim also is disturbed by my idea of putting the Bible on trial. He says, "No, others dealt with books. They burned them in Germany in the 1930s. Like I said, I don't want to burn the Bible. I don't want to drown it, shred it, or put it before a firing squad, as the right-wing freak in the video, audio, whatever, said he wishes to do. No, upon conviction, I would merely like to banish the Bible to the realm of fantasy and superstition where it belongs." Maybe if we could get the American... You know what? It's not a matter of trial. Maybe the thing we need to do is to get the American Library Association, or whoever has control over the Dewey Decimal System, to reclassify the Bible as fantasy. Or just fiction. Maybe that would be the start that we need. Ron in Raleigh writes and says, "You know, Bob, when you consider that Jesus only appears three times in the Bible, what else could you base your worship on besides death cult?" But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff with his life that makes sense. You know what a Roman history geek I am. You can make an argument, save it for later. Meanwhile, Corey in the Free State of Louisville, "Jesus saves, Satan scores!" Pronounced Shatan, of course. That joke is big in Buffalo. Miroslav Shatan, former member of the Buffalo Sabres. Fun fact, most sports websites have specific player ID numbers for the players when you want to look at their stats. They have Miro Shatan as player number 666. How cute. Scores on the short side, too, I'll bet. So that's a starting place for this Friday on the front porch. It is by no means a stopping point. But don't be surprised. This is all over the place. Don't be surprised when you see this come to your neighborhood. Don't be surprised when because it is surprising. It's shocking when you actually see it in practice. When you see some right-winger hooting and hollering about Jeebus and about Sharia law. Again, you know, we could have a discussion with them about Sharia, but they would have to actually know what it was first. I don't want to live under anybody's religious law. I particularly don't want to live under anybody's religious law that that forbids me barbecued pulled pork sandwiches and ribs and delicious handmade sausages from Binkerts.com. I just tried the Debretziner sausage today. Extra spicy and smoky. Whoa, yummy with mustard. No, religious law would say I can't have either one. Have it. No, thank you. Any religion that doesn't like pigs is no religion for me. Tasty, tasty, tasty. But it's on street corners, it's in front of the White House, it's at rallies in Orange County, California, and it is, in fact, in the halls of government. Peter King, as big and nasty a bigot as exists in the United States Congress, is actually the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. And he has scheduled hearings on what he calls, and this is a quote, the extent of radicalization in the American Muslim community and that community's response. The hearings begin March 10th of that's next week. Thursday. Betsy's eating spicy noodles just now, and she notes, I would imagine that Sharia serves the same place in U.S. religious life as halakha, and that's Jewish law. Marriage licenses, divorce papers, adoption, records of birth and death, and that's the truth. And you know what? Within religious communities, religious law obtains. These people don't want Sharia law, but I don't see them complaining about Roman Catholic Church law. Where were they a couple of months back when a nun was excommunicated over an abortion? Abortion is legal in the United States, but Catholic law was used against a woman and she was thrown out of her church over it. Where were these fur-bearing freaks then? Nowhere to be found. Why? Because this is all an exercise not in religion, but in hate. If Islam's central tenet was to worship kittens, Christian right-wing fundamentalists would be out in the streets with signs declaring that kittens are Satan. They want a theocracy in this country. Their way or the highway. They are so puny and pathetic and weak in their faith that they cannot tolerate another faith being side by side with it. Thank you, Betsy, for sharing this little piece of personal information. Betsy says, when I got divorced, I paid $400 for a Jewish divorce in addition to the state of Texas divorce. Interestingly, both Judaism and Islam permit divorce. Christianity, Jesus outright condemned it and said no. Now, we can have a discussion about why he took that position, but no divorce. The Roman Catholic Church, you know, the English part of the Reformation largely gets underway because Henry VIII is married to this really ugly Spanish woman who can't give him sons. Never mind the fact that the male is responsible for whether or not there's a son. That's another, it's biology. They don't believe in biology. The fact of the matter was he'd found him a new hottie and wanted rid of the, yeah. Boom. English Protestant Reformation. No divorce. But there are no, there's, I mean, there were Israeli flags in this protest. But no one was protesting the use of Jewish religious law regarding divorce, birth, adoption. Because it has nothing to do with religious law. It has to do with the whipped up furor of a little cottage industry based upon hate. That's where it is. And next week, never mind March the 20th. Next week, March the 10th, in the halls of the Congress of the United States, in which every member has sworn an oath to uphold the Constitution, one of those members is going to put a single religious sect, a single religion, on trial. Does that give you chills? Because it does me. Because if they feel froggy enough to try Islam, how long until they try the non-believers? How long until one sect becomes dominant and the Baptists try the Catholics? Then again, the Catholics are old hands at it, and maybe they'd like to try the Baptists. You know why the church used burning at the stake as a means of execution? Because under their religious law, priests were forbidden to shed blood. So they reasoned that by building a big fire and barbecuing someone alive, the priests could keep their little hands clean and claim they had not shed blood. They had merely burned a human being alive, and they burned them and burned them and burned them and burned them throughout the centuries. If you are of either North American, and by American I mean Native American, Indian, if you are, especially in Mesoamerica, Mexican, if you have any blood of Mexico in your veins, or as a white Western European, you have that in your veins, odds are you can go back in time and you could track things down to the point where you could say, oh, look, there's great Auntie Matilda. The church burned her alive for being a witch. Because the burnings happened in multitudes. Religion of peace, right? Russell Simmons has issued a statement on Peter King's trial of Islam next week. He said, there's a lot not to like about next week's congressional hearings into Islamic radicalization, but one of its most appalling aspects is the naked hypocrisy of the hearings chairman, Republican Peter King of New York. Until now, Representative King has been best known for his very public support of the Irish Republican Army, which, of course, was internationally recognized as a terrorist organization. Despite the IRA's long history of murder, violence, and intimidation, King argued until breaking with the group over its failure to support the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Oh, that's just charming, isn't it? Yeah. The IRA represented the legitimate voice of occupied Ireland, That's what Peter King said. And frankly, we're not mad at Representative King for that. By relentlessly lobbying for the IRA in Washington, Representative King created an environment where it was possible for the British government to finally sit down and talk with the IRA's political wing, Sinn Féin. Negotiations that ultimately led to a peaceful end to a decades-old war, if not centuries, and undoubtedly saved many lives. Instead, our beef with Representative King is that while he was happy to operate within the gray areas of the IRA debate, when the conversation turned to Muslim Americans, his worldview became black and white. To Representative King, a Muslim seems to equal terrorist, or at least terrorist sympathizer, no matter what a person's background, political leanings, or actions. When pressing for the rights of the Irish people, King was careful to make a distinction between the violent extremists in the IRA and those in Sinn Féin who were for legitimate political reform. But when it comes to Muslim Americans, some of whom are his own constituents, Representative King has no problem lumping everyday, hard-working, peace-loving Muslims in with the terrorists. Having witnessed firsthand how a conversation between Sinn Féin and the British directly led to peace, Representative King, more than anyone, should know the best resolutions are always reached through honest dialogue, not demonization and divisiveness. The deep irony is that Representative King has begun polluting our national conversation with his hypocritical hate-mongering at just the moment that the Arab world's secular revolution has created a unique opportunity for strengthened conversation and cultural ties. Maybe that's not a coincidence. Politicians like Representative King make a living playing on people's fears and misconceptions. It makes their job easier when we view all Muslims as terrorists out for blood instead of possible partners in a shared future. Let's not let Representative King get away with it. We need to hear from politicians who are looking to bring people together, not needlessly push them apart. If we're truly worried about America's future, we need to look at hate-mongering politicians like Representative Peter King, not our Muslim fellow citizens who reject violence and extremism and simply look to be part of this great American fabric. On Sunday, March the 6th, at 2 p.m. in Times Square, New York City, I will, with thousands of people in support of Muslims in a rally, Muslim Americans in a rally called Today I Am a Muslim Too. Please join me on Sunday in New York City or on Facebook as a show of support. That from Russell Simmons. I want to be clear about this. I understand what Russell Simmons is saying, but I also think he doesn't get it, or at least in part. Representative Peter King knows that the people who push buttons, touch screens, and otherwise fill out ballots in his name are themselves fear-mongering, highly prejudiced bigots themselves. Consequently, he has to throw them red meat. Has to throw them red meat. And that's what this is. Representative Peter King knows that there is no threat from America's Muslim community. Or that if there is one, it is no greater a threat to American national security than Southern Baptists. Than crazy fundamentalist Christians like Randall Terry. Muslims have never bombed an abortion clinic. Muslims didn't blow up the Murrah Federal Building. A Muslim didn't fly a plane into the IRS building in Austin, Texas. A Muslim didn't load up with weapons and the bulletproof vests and get liquored up and go to shoot up the Tides Foundation. A Muslim didn't murder Dr. Tiller. A Muslim didn't plant bombs in Centennial Park in Atlanta, Georgia. A Muslim didn't walk into a production of Annie at a Unitarian church in East Tennessee and start blowing people away. A Muslim didn't answer the door in Pittsburgh and start blasting at the cops. No. Those were all fine, God-fearing, upstanding, white Christians. And Peter King knows it. From Mora, Bob, Randall Terry does not give a shit about Sharia law. He makes his living stirring up the believers. As soon as a new Terry Schiavo comes on the scene, he'll jump to that cause. The true believers are at least honest in their hate. Honest hate. Yeah, at least they do it to your face, I guess. You're right. Yeah, I understand. The Bible, I guess, what is it? You shall know them by their fruits. And the fruits of these fundamentalists is toxic in the extreme. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
Oh, not too much. Try and hang in there.
Well, I have noticed that you've been in and out of chat. How you doing, brother?
Rough. It's been kind of tough last couple of days. Been passing out, which is rather unnerving.
That's downright frightening.
Yeah, you start ending up, face first in the pile, you kind of wonder how you got there.
Right.
So.
Getting any help?
Working on it.
I hope you do.
It's not that easy, but working on it. Anyway, something you mentioned last night caused me to think back before news was a commodity when it was a public service. And you had people like Huntley and Brinkley. And you had McNeil Lehrer.
Right.
And you had...
Real news?
Uncle Walter. Yeah. And these people...
Howard K. Smith.
Yeah. These were real people. These people actually... As far as I know, all of them reported from the front lines.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not like they were some pretty boy just set up there to.
No, they weren't Megyn Kelly.
No. And like I said, back then. You were fairly certain that the news you were getting was relatively good, as best as they could give it to you. Nowadays, you know that whatever comes out of the for-profit media is just that. It's for-profit. There is... Christ, we did away with the idea that there was a public responsibility for stations to air public service content.
Right.
Yeah. We can't do that because it cuts into their bottom line. It's our airways, isn't it? I thought.
The stuff that goes over the air certainly is.
Yeah.
Now, cable is more of an open question, but there is a certain amount of regulation of cable.
Right. But even that, the broadcast stuff they don't have to put on public service. You remember they used to have public service programming at 4:00 in the morning.
Oh gosh, yes.
You know.
Generally speaking, it was awful.
Yeah. Stuff like...
That went away with that. That went away with the rise of the infomercial.
Right.
Also awful.
Exactly. But, I mean, you know, you have stuff from, you know, propaganda materials from NAMM coming on at 4 in the morning. Yeah. And it was their propaganda. But the news was relatively straight. Now, no.
No, and I've got an example of that. I've got a clip of Bill O'Reilly. I may run it during the program, depending on the turn of events. But I've got a clip of Bill O'Reilly explaining to his knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing faithful why it is that it's okay for him to be a part of a union, but not okay for people in Wisconsin to be.
Yeah, God.
It's called AFTRA, and they helped me save my pension once. Yeah, it's a Jim Dandy little clip if we get to it.
Disgusting. And you were talking about the Christians, and here's something we don't think about, we don't talk about ever, really, is the Christianizing of Europe. It was very brutal, Bob. Extraordinarily so.
Absolutely. And went on way up into the 1500s and 1600s before it got to some places.
Exactly. And the thing is, I mean, what was the Europe that they were Christianizing? The vast majority of it was matriarchal in nature.
Well, it depends on when and where, Koss, because by the time the Roman Empire fell, actually, by the time the Roman Empire was tottering, during the time of the four emperors, the entirety of Western Europe had largely been pacified, and that is to say, Romanized.
Right.
Because if you really want to go into the detailed analysis, it was Julius Caesar who basically put the Druids and the basic Celtic religion to bed, because he killed them all. And
yep.
He cut down their sacred groves, and he did it intentionally.
Correct.
And then the Roman state religion replaced it and sort of incorporated, because the Roman state religion was inclusive. Oh, you've got a god? Well, you know, put his statue over here next to, next to Hera.
Right.
But it couldn't tolerate religions that said they were the only religion.
Correct.
And that's where the Christians got themselves in trouble, because they weren't willing to, and, you know, it's always been this way with Christianity. Maybe that's the point. Christianity has never worked and played well with others. Christianity has always been our way or the highway. Bless his heart, Pliny the Younger was a dear friend of the Emperor Trajan.
Uh-huh.
And he was absolutely flummoxed, Cossack. Trying to deal with Christians in his, he was the provincial governor of Bithynia Pontus. And you had all these Christians coming up, and he said, look, here, be whatever you want to be. Offer a quick prayer for the well-being of the divine emperor, and go back to whatever you were doing. No! No! Okay, fine. You can die. But by the time that Christianity is creeping into mainly the northern European states, I don't know, maybe there was some Thor and all of that stuff still hanging about, but that would be largely in places that the Romans never quite got to.
Right.
But when I think about my people ethnically, it was Julius Caesar who put paid to their religion. Can't blame that one on Christianity.
Right.
But once Christianity began, and interestingly, it was actually a state reorganization of the Roman Empire that introduced the concept of a diocese. That's another organizational unit that Christianity didn't have the creativity to come up with on its own. They just bogarted it off of the Roman state.
Right.
But it, you know, but Christianity is always intolerant. Christianity has never been tolerant.
Correct.
It might, now the Jesus religion was tolerant. But the Jesus religion is not Christianity. The religion or faith, or actually it was a Jewish subcult that the followers just simply called the Way.
Right.
If you read some of it, it's got an almost sort of Buddhist overtone to it with some Jewish religious law sprinkled in for flavor. But it wasn't, kill the heretic or anything like that. No, not in the least. You know, these right-wingers want to complain about the intolerance of Islam. They're mainly talking about the spread of the Muslim faith that went on after the 7th century A.D. and leads up and into the Crusades. It was the Crusades that really taught Islam intolerance. And who were those teaching intolerance to the Muslims? Why, look, it was the Christians. Crusade is a Christian word, not a Muslim word.
Right.
Well, you know, Islam was the home team, for God's sakes. We were the invaders.
Correct. And, you know the old story about kill them all, the Lord will know his own?
Yeah.
That came out of the First Crusade.
Sure.
Yeah. The scout came back and said, what do we do, master? They're half Christian, half Muslim. What do we do?
Kill them all. The Lord will know his own.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's manifested, what, in the late 20th century by kill them all and let God sort them out?
Yeah. The same mentality. Yeah.
You know, I think at their core, fundamentalist Christians know, if you loaded them up with sodium pentothal or something, they'd explain to you that their religion is a load of crap.
No, aren't they all?
And it is that gnawing doubt that drives them to throw crosses on the ground at the foot of a lone Muslim and to scream, Lord, wake him up! What if that guy had gotten up and said, you see this face? You see this beard? I'm Jesus, and I've come back. And I'm about to lay waste to the lot of you. Be gone from me, ye servants of iniquity. Hoo-wee! That would have been some good theater. That would have been some real good theater.
Well, and, you know, these people just don't get it. And speaking of not getting it, I saw that 2007 clip again of candidate Obama saying if people are on strike...
Oh, that I'm going to put on some comfortable shoes and walk on the picket line with them?
You got it.
I laugh every time I see that.
And I'm going to my software. Where are you now? Where art thou now?
Oh, wow. Yeah, Obama, where art thou? Not, oh, brother, where art thou?
Yeah. I mean, they're having a strike. It's right there. It's out in the open. You could join them, you know.
Yeah.
Wouldn't kill you. Might do you a world of good.
Yeah, those are people who like you.
Yeah.
Or at least used to.
I don't understand. I do not understand. I mean, I've gotten past the point of understanding with that man. It's just...
Well, I'm not. It's all politics. And politics and doing the right thing are often mutually exclusive.
It's Chinatown.
There you go.
God, Jesus. But, I mean, don't people understand that they really need to, be honest with themselves?
No.
I mean, if this is what you said, did you mean it? If you didn't mean it, why did you say it?
Cognitive dissonance in a nutshell.
I mean, No, did you see the clip of the security in Madison tackling that legislator?
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting video coming out of Madison. I'd kind of like to be there. I saw the funeral procession today too. The jazz funeral.
I missed that.
Oh, that was quite. I mean, people as far as the eye could see. You think Scott Walker's getting a little nervous yet?
I think he's plenty.
Called the Repiglicans have called for the police to go and arrest the 14 senators, and the police said no.
Fuck no.
Among other things, they're across state lines, and we're not. What do you want us to do? Set up a legislative border patrol?
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean,
But you know what? There is something, and I can't help wondering if Wisconsin and the difficulties Snot Walker has had in getting cooperation from the law enforcement, I can't help but wonder if that's a motivation behind this latest little bit of nastiness coming out of Arizona. The Phoenix New Times reporting that State Senator Sylvia Allen is pushing a bill that would give Governor Jan Brewer what is called a blank check to establish a state guard that would do her bidding, whatever that bidding might be.
Oh, God.
Isn't this how that little dust-up in 1860 got started?
Something along those lines. Oh, my.
Section 1, Section 26-174, Arizona Revised Statutes, amended to read, Arizona State Guard Establishment Purposes Appropriations, A, if the National Guard of Arizona or a major portion thereof is called into active federal service, or if the National Guard or a major portion thereof is alerted for federal service, or for any other reason the governor considers to be necessary, the governor may establish an armed force for the safety and protection of the lives and property of the citizens of the state, which shall be known as the Arizona State Guard. The Arizona State Guard shall, insofar as practicable, be governed by and subject to the laws of the state pertaining to the National Guard. The governor shall issue or cause to be issued rules and regulations to govern administration and organization of the State Guard. The governor. Not the legislature. The governor. Any funds which are unexpended from appropriations to the National Guard may be used for establishment and maintenance of the Arizona State Guard. Wouldn't it be handy to have your own little private army to maybe go and, I don't know, drag some senators kicking and screaming back across the state line?
Yeah.
You reckon the Arizona State Guard would fire on Arizona citizens?
Hey. Orders is orders.
If you're willing to join the Arizona State Guard, you're damned right you would. Because you'd know at the outset that it was created to do the governor's bidding, and if the governor said fire, you squeeze and breathe.
Correct. Well, that's the thing these people don't seem to understand is that, It was that little World War One corporal who had a bunch of his own marauding guards.
Yeah, there was him.
You know, we keep forgetting that. That's not a real.
Now, see, I don't think they forget it. I think they're modeling after it, Cossack.
Yeah, and what happens when the shoe is on the other foot? All of a sudden, then it's. Occupation.
Oh, no. If the shoe's on the other foot, if there are some dark-skinned children in matching T-shirts doing a step routine, declaring that they want to be like Obama, well, then that's a sure sign that fascist communist Kenyan means to bring Sharia law to America. Because, see, that happened. And that's what they said.
People are idiots.
Yes, they are. Hey, Cossack, hang in, brother. We're stacking them up. You have yourself a good weekend, all right?
You too, Bob.
All right. Take care. Get to feeling better, brother.
I'm working on it.
All right. Bye now. The Cossack calling from North Florida. Marty writing in. Apparently someone has forgotten Star Wars Episode 2. Someone is playing Jar Jar Binks to grant Jan Brewer her own clone army. Oh, this is, we are such science fiction fans here, aren't we? Rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mom, Bob.
what do you say, Tony?
How's it going?
Well, pretty good, pretty good.
Hey, I'm digging the Ustream, man. You're really digging that cigar.
Yeah, well, no, I think it went on to its long reward.
Still, you look like you were definitely enjoying it.
Oh, I was, until it refused to continue burning.
Oh, well, at least you had some of it. Before we get into this, let me say what up to Cause. Great hearing you on the show, and hopefully you're feeling great. So just a moment of, it's nice to hear him out there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, let's get down to brass tacks here. So they want to put the Quran on trial.
March 20th.
Right. What? Who do we call for a witness?
Christians.
No, I mean, Muhammad's not around, and most of the guys around at that time are pretty much dead. So.
Oh, no, wait, Tony. You apparently are not up on how Christians run trials.
Okay. School me.
Okay, let's say you want to try someone for being a witch. You go find another Christian.
All right.
You have the Christian promise that as Jesus is his Lord and Savior, he will tell the truth. And then you say to the other Christian, is that woman over there a witch? As Jesus is more my Lord and Savior, she is. Burn her. And it's over. So what the March 20th trial will be is a bunch of fundamentalists reading verses, you know, some of the icky ones from the Quran.
Yeah.
And there are icky icky verses in the Quran, just like there are icky verses in the Old Testament and the New Testament.
Yeah, that's true.
But they won't read any of the loving, good, kind, you know. No,
yeah.
They won't read any of those.
Well, let me ask you this. If they put this thing on trial, doesn't that give it any form of legitimacy in anybody's eyes? Because how are you going to...
No, they're only trying it to prove that it's a satanic work.
Okay. Oh, man, and where are we going to find a jury that's not tainted?
Oh, it has to be tainted. Who do you think... Wait. Remember the Christian trial of the alleged witch a minute ago, that scenario?
Oh, yeah.
Who do you think the jury was in that? Well, hint, there's no jury. It's strictly an auto de fe.
Okay. This guy, when they said that Islam permits the stoning, I hope I'm saying this right, stoning of women.
And children.
And Christianity doesn't allow that. But I guess when the KKK were hanging black people in the name of Christianity, that was okay.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, they hung black people and it was a Christian.
And every last one of them was a Christian.
Yep, go figure on that one. Anyway, this guy, what's this guy's name? The guy who wants to outlaw Sharia law, the congressman or something?
Well, no, there's a... Name any Republican. I'm opposed to Sharia law.
But the main guy, the guy who...
The guy who's going to put Islam on trial in the Congress? That's Peter King.
Hey, doesn't he ever run into Keith Emerson?
Keith Ellison?
Yeah, doesn't he ever run into him?
Yeah, he hates Keith Ellison.
Well, what happens when he runs into that guy?
I don't know. Maybe he makes the sign of the cross or something?
Wow. I mean, now Keith is... That guy's a congressman, and Keith is a what?
Member of the same body.
Okay. Well, how can you... it's kind of... I don't know. How can you work in the same branch, not in branch, but same system as this guy, and do something like that? How do you... This guy must have no conscience, or he just don't care.
No, he's a total asshat is what he is.
Yeah.
But he's also a bigot, so it doesn't matter if he speaks to Keith Ellison. You know, if he ever has to respond to him on the floor, he has to refer to him as my good friend. But that's strictly, everybody understands that that's just pro forma. That Peter King would never be caught dead in the same room with Keith Ellison, at least not making nicey at him.
Do you remember a while back when I told you that, I told you about how this is almost like doing the right thing and things that keep building and building and building? I mean, it just.
Yeah, until it blows up.
Yeah, yeah. And remember how I told you that when I go to the mosque by my house, we had a security guard, and I couldn't figure out why? I think now I'm starting to figure out why. Because, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It just keeps on rolling and getting bigger and bigger. I mean, like Malcolm X said, a racial explosion is worse than a nuclear explosion, or a religious explosion is worse than a nuclear explosion, because it just feeds off itself. I don't know what's going to happen, but it just seems like things just keep escalating and escalating, and, you know, you really don't know where it's going to end, you know? But,
Oh, if it keeps escalating and escalating, I know where it ends.
Okay, where do you think it ends?
In blood.
Yeah. I haven't seen a video of that guy praying yet. You said they were throwing crosses down on the ground in front
of him? Yeah, they had little metal crosses, and they threw them at his feet.
Did anybody ever actually physically touch him?
No.
Okay, so when he was down on his knees, nobody actually physically touched him?
No.
Because I don't know.
No, they knew not. They knew not to do that.
If I don't. I'm not sure how the guy kept his cool. I mean, he definitely turned the other cheek, but I don't know what would happen if. If I was in that situation, I'm not exactly sure what would happen if they had actually physically touched me. But, I mean, the guy held his own. He came out looking.
But the thing is, if I understand, I had a note from our good friend Jude up in Washington State. And apparently the guy is there day in and day out.
Oh, okay.
And all he does is pray.
So he's not doing it for any special.
No, he wasn't just there because the freaks were going to be there.
Well, okay, then
he just kind of happened to. He just sort of happened to be in the there when these freaks showed up.
They kind of treated him like a witch doctor, if you think about it.
Jude told me that she stood near him the last time she was in D.C.
Wow.
And he just gave off an aura of peaceful dignity.
Well, that's cool. I mean, like, he's doing the, I think he's doing it the Martin Luther King way, where, you know, just be peaceful and they'll end up looking like idiots. I keep asking these questions because you know more about this stuff than I do. This guy who wants to outlaw feet washing or Sharia law?
In Tennessee?
Yeah.
Well, they want to outlaw Sharia law and make it treason in Tennessee, but that includes foot washing.
Here's the problem with that, and I'll tell you what it is. These guys can't do anything about homelessness or jobs or inflation or feeding the hungry, so they grab these non-issues. They grab something that, because they can't, it takes too much energy and too much homework and too much work and too much staying out late.
Yeah, but back up, Tony. How many times do you think these fundamentalist monsters have ever spent in actually praying for a resolution to hunger or homelessness? Now bear in mind that in the New Testament, Jesus makes explicit reference to being homeless and hungry. And he says it in no uncertain terms. He says, if you've not done it unto the least of these my brothers, you've also not done it unto me. Because his idiot disciples, and really, if honest to Pete, I'm not just being mean here. If you read the Gospels, Tony, the disciples were definitely not the sharpest knives in the drawer.
No, that's well, I'm not going
to. I mean, they were a few slices away from a peanut butter and banana sandwich. So they're having. He's trying to explain to them. He says, if you see somebody hungry, and you've fed them, if you've seen someone homeless and you've housed them, if you've seen someone sick, and you've ministered to them, if you've seen someone in prison and you've visited them, if you've done it to them, you've done it to me. But if you've seen someone hungry and you haven't fed them, if you've seen someone naked and you haven't clothed them, if you've seen someone in prison and you haven't visited them, well, to the extent that you didn't do it to those my brothers, you didn't do it to me.
Yeah.
And the disciples, well, you know, the disciples were like, what, Lord?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not getting back to what I was saying, though, I think that these guys, they want to make it look like they're doing something, and they don't really, like you said, they don't really solve the problems. They just, it's like holding a shiny object in front of
them. Well, Randall Terry, as Maura noted, Randall Terry is a hustler.
Yeah.
I mean, he's wearing a full, I mean, he looked like he was, my God, well, when you see the video, he's wearing a fur coat that looks like he's ready to go to the 1914 Yale-Harvard game.
Or the player's ball.
You know, and there's no way this guy, you know, the reason he bankrupted the judgment against Operation Rescue was to save the thousands upon tens of thousands of dollars that he had hustled out of the Save the Little Fetuses crowd.
Yeah,
it was a con. It was an abuse of the bankruptcy system.
And those people, they were saying to him, they were saying to Akbar, they were saying Allahu Akbar, they were saying Akbar to the guy.
No, they were saying Izzah Akbar.
Izzah Akbar? They're too stupid to even pronounce it right?
Yeah, Izzah. That's somebody's told them that that's the Arabic word for Jesus.
Okay.
Izzah Akbar!
Oh, God. They say it with a Southern accent, too. That must have been funny.
Oh, anyway, yeah, redneck Arabic.
I don't know. Can I ask you about something else real quick?
Sure.
I'll let you go. Did you see what Huckabee said about Natalie Portman?
Yeah, I read that earlier. I appreciate you sending that to me. I was going to get to it later this evening. That's stunning.
Did you see the video that Natalie stabbed back with?
No, that I did not see.
Apparently there's a video. I might be wrong. You might want to stream it later or something. There's a video where she's doing a rap, and apparently she's rapping about, like, if I'm wrong, it might be something else, but it's rapping about mind your own business, it doesn't concern you.
Well, and what Tony's talking about, everybody, is the fact that Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who used the power of state governor when he was governor of Arkansas to get his son off of a rap of torturing a poor dog that he had hung from a tree and beating it to death, Mike Huckabee has decided that Natalie Portman is a sleazy harlot because she got pregnant and she ain't married.
I mean, how come he... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, he was on Michael Medved's radio show, and Michael Medved is a notorious, sickening right-winger. And he said Portman's out-of-wedlock pregnancy was troubling. It's troubling. It's unfortunate that we glorify and glamorize the idea of out-of-wedlock pregnancy.
How come he didn't say anything about Bristol Palin? I mean, come on, man.
Well, because Mike Huckabee appeals to the same bunch of dim-witted, oatmeal-dribbling house helmet wearers that Mussolini does.
I mean, at least Natalie Portman has talent. I mean, you know, Bristol Palin, other than the fact, I mean, if, let's face it.
Well, I'd love to hear the rest of the interview, because if he was bringing up Natalie Portman, surely to God, somewhere along the way, they had to bring up the fact that in that movie, The Black Swan, she was a-kissing on another woman.
Yeah, I saw that. As much as I hate to say it, I did enjoy it a little bit. two things.
It's a good thing we don't give out emails. You'd get email. You'd get hate mail.
Sorry about that. Two more things, and I'll let you go. Number one, if it wasn't for the fact that Bristol Palin's mother was who she was, she'd be flipping burgers somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Because this face...
No, she wouldn't. She'd be on welfare and smoking crack.
I mean, what's...
Or she'd be doing what she and Levi did before, busting into houses and stealing opiates.
Wasilla is the crack capital of that area.
And it's a lot of other capitals, too. It's the meth capital. It's the oxycodone capital.
And one more thing. I don't know Huckabee personally, but what kind of a person you are is told by how you raise your kids. I believe that. I don't know if you believe that or not. You can tell how well your kids, what kind of a person you are by how well your kids behave. And I've met your children, and they're pretty cool. So I've come to the conclusion that you must be one hell of a dad.
All the credit goes to Agnes. To the extent that there's any credit, it goes to Agnes.
Well, anyway, I'll let you say that, but I think you're a hell of a father. And any kid who does that to an animal, I think, for lack of a better word, it reflects on what kind of a parent you are. Because
And the kid did it. He hanged a dog upside down from a tree and beat it to death.
That shows what kind of upbringing he had. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
No, Mike Huckabee is a monster. Let's make no bones about it. Mike Huckabee is a hypocrite, a charlatan, a fraud, and, among other things, a demagogue.
Yeah. And his whole Kenyan thing is that's pretty funny. Now go ahead and finish what you're going to say, and then I'll say one more thing. I'll let you.
Well, the thing that struck me out of the Huckabee interview is that he leveled all of this criticism, ostensibly speaking up for other single moms in the country. Most single moms are very poor, uneducated, can't get a job, and if it weren't for government assistance, their kids would be starving to death and never have health care. And that's the story that we're not seeing. You know, right now, 75% of black kids in this country are born out of wedlock. 61% of Hispanic kids across the board, 41% of all live births in America are out of wedlock births, and the cost of that is simply staggering.
Well, like I said before, he ain't talking about Bristol Palin.
No, and he's also not talking about why those statistics are the way they are. He's not talking about poverty. He's not talking, not real poverty. He's not talking about the root causes of poverty, ignorance and hopelessness. Unemployment, bigotry, racism. No, none of that. No, hell no.
I don't think Natalie Portman is going to have to be on government assistance anytime soon. I'm really interested to see how this whole trial thing turns out. I'm definitely, you obviously know the reasons why I'm interested, but it's going to be quite interesting to see how this works out. And right before I leave, Cause, it was great hearing you again, so hang in there, bro.
All right, thanks, Tony. Take care. Have a good weekend.
Bye.
Bye now. Calling from Vegas, that's our buddy Tony. Marty chiming in says, no, it's not that they can't do anything about real problems. These people won't do anything about real problems. And with regard to Huckabee's son beating that poor animal to death, and how does that compare with what got Mike Vick some prison time? Well, Marty, you got to understand, if Michael Vick had been a card-carrying, family values-voting Republican, he might have gotten away with it, too. But where Mike Huckabee's son was concerned, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Maura, letting her sense of humor run wild regarding Tony's comment that he enjoyed the scene of the two women kissing. I'm so glad we could please him. That's me, every man's fantasy. I warned you, Tony. I warned you. Let's see. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Man, you guys, I tell you. Weren't you on the verge of getting in trouble the other day?
Yeah, well, it's not like I go looking for it, Sandra.
You know, it don't really take much, but anyway.
Oh, I live on eggshells around here.
Yeah, that was hilarious. So, you know this writer, Ruth Marcus?
Yes.
Yeah, well, she, you know, she's like the last, I mean, she's a real Obama supporter. This woman is even starting to...
No, has she crossed over?
Yeah, well, no, she'll be back, though, because she's real third way. Every time I read her, I'm like, oh, no. But I read it anyway, because it's like reading a right wing in the alternative media, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, she's calling him the... Where's Waldo, President?
Oh, beautiful.
I was like, damn. Yeah, and it's just, you know, she makes some good options.
Yeah, that'd be like somebody, that'd be like, oh, I don't know, that'd be like the Peggy Nooners writing something nasty about Reagan. You know, it's just, you can't imagine it.
Yeah, so I was kind of surprised, but, you know, I guess the sort of, you know, it's just so timid. I guess the passivity is starting to get to people, you know?
It's about time, isn't it? Well, and yet at the same time, if you go read the right-wing media, all of this in Wisconsin is being very carefully orchestrated by that Kenyan fascist Lamanist Muslim.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's why it's, you know, I can kind of feel, you know, except when I start flashing on the flying around with Bush, and then I'm like, well... I don't have much sympathy, but in the meanwhile, you know, I had another moment of the Louise from being there.
Yeah.
What's going on in Texas?
Which part? The one, you mean with the one where the cops stop you and say, all right, now, Jesus, we're going to deport you unless you tell me whose gardener you are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, that has to be the most outrageous thing I've ever heard and read, this law. I mean, I can't even, how is that going to work out?
Well, this is a crazy lady named Representative Debbie Riddle. She's a Republican.
I made a mistake of looking up an image. Boy, come on now.
She looks like a slightly less disgusting version of Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
No, but it's just they all
with her Texas. Did you see the picture of her with her Texas flag shirt on, with the horses in the background? Hoo-wee.
Oh God.
I mean, but this woman has a history, okay? Just like Gerald Allen down in Alabama, who wants to make sure creeping Sharia law doesn't find its way into the into the Opelika County courthouse, or the Lee County courthouse, or whatever. And well, he has a history, and you know, his history was in 2005, trying to pass a law to ban the purchase or possession of books by gay authors in Alabama. Well, this Debbie Riddle, she's got a history too. She is notorious for having said that people of color, well, they are used to entitlements. They're used to entitlements.
Well, no, but I mean, I'm just thinking, do these people even read back what they say or anything? Because
because the cognitive dissonance inside what passes for their brain, Sandra, this makes sense to them. And in particular, in this instance, the bill that she is proposing that gives 2 years of jail time and a $10,000 fine for knowing. Now, this applies to white people, mind you. Okay, this is a law that will be applied to white people. For knowingly hiring an illegal immigrant, unless you're hiring that person for labor or other work to be done primarily at a single-family residence. In other words, if they're a gardener or a maid, you're in the clear.
No, I understand, but the whole commentary about, well, we don't want to stifle the economic engine, I'm like, is that really something you want to be, you know, proud of? And, you know, driving Miss Crazy, she needs to stop, okay?
Yeah, I love it. The Texas economic engine runs on $2 an hour maids and gardeners.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the whole thing is just so, it's perverse. Also, you know, if you are a brown person down there, Jesus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it's amazing that Republicans control everything. I mean, people must don't vote there. Is that what it is? Because God knows.
No, it's the gerrymandering.
Okay, because I don't understand.
Remember the crazy?
Way.
No, do you remember the crazy ass gerrymandering that went on?
Yeah. Oh, but I still don't understand how to, you know, because Texas ain't doing that well. I mean, the poverty level, all the indices are just right off the chart down there, and that's one of them states with no union activity, right? Supposed to be.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be the utopia, ain't it?
Right, because right to work just means that it's paradise. But here's what's fun is Debbie Riddle has pals who think that her new bill is just wonderful.
That's what I mean. That's the sort of thing I'm saying about the Louise from being there. It's like devoid of any realities, and that only applies to, forgive me, white people in this society.
Yes.
I mean, everybody else has to deal with what is real. But them freaks and them same bitches who is yelling at that Muslim, they don't have to deal with the real world, obviously.
That
they would be carted away.
That hood of Jesus. Oh, and by the way, because I was watching the video, nobody else was, I'll just tell you this, and you'll have to take my word for it. They weren't no people of color in that video, except for one dude who stopped by and said, you know, you people are nuts.
Yeah, right. Well, no, and you know, yeah, it's just what I'm saying. It's like, once again, the it's sort of a perfect storm of Negro in the White House, bad economic times, crazy white people. It's like a formula. You could just plug it in, and you'd come out with them freaks every time.
Well, have you seen the hissy? There's a right-wing hissy out there going down because specifically of something that has come out in a new book where Barack Obama said, well, yeah, it's kind of hard to get around. The tea baggers probably, you know, there's probably an element of racism to their hate.
Oh, Obama said that?
Yeah. He said that at a dinner.
Cause duh, you know, oh, and what, everyone's having some sort of mental breakdown behind that?
Oh, the right wing is, they're out there doing their best, some of my best friends are Negroes act and, you know.
Well, no, but it's too much. See, that's the same thing with, you know, the whites who are able to sort of spew their racism and hatred, and then at the same time, they're swearing up and down that they're not, and how dare you ever say anything about it. And it's like, you remember when I told you ages ago when, I knew old poor Barack was in trouble when he buffered up the meeting with the vice president. Remember that?
Yep.
I mean, to me, that was a touchstone. I'm like, oh, shit. And Morning Cohen, it's just been downhill ever since for him. Because he opened his mouth, and then it's just like a swirl, and that swirl ain't stopped, you know?
Yeah. It shows no sign of it.
Well, and then, you know, so he can say that because it's true. I mean, the man... Listen, one thing about Obama is, like, I wouldn't be surprised if that fool just don't have dropped dead. You know, the pressure. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the fact, and I mean, how can you be that calm and unruffled?
That's what I mean.
There's got to be some moments when you're, you know, just behind closed doors kicking the garbage can or something. Well, here's what has them all bent out of shape. It's a new book by Kenneth Walsh called Family of Freedom.
Is that, oh, God, that title is a bit special anyway.
Yeah, just a little bit. I kind of winced a little bit, too.
Yeah.
But here's the passage. But Obama, in his most candid moments, acknowledged that race was still a problem. In May 2010, he told guests at a private White House dinner that race was probably a key component in the rising opposition to his presidency from conservatives, especially right-wing activists, in the anti-incumbent Tea Party movement that was then surging across the country. Many middle-class and working-class whites felt aggrieved and resentful that the federal government was helping other groups, including bankers, automakers, irresponsible people who had defaulted on their mortgages, and the poor, but wasn't helping them nearly enough. A guest suggested that when Tea Party activists said they wanted to take back their country, their real motivation was to stir up anger and anxiety at having a black president, and Obama didn't dispute the idea. He agreed that there was a subterranean agenda in the anti-Obama movement, a racially biased one that was unfortunate. But he sadly conceded that there was little he could do about it.
Well, no, but I'm stuck on the whole idea that, you know, that's the whole biggest problem with the whites, is this idea that somehow they haven't been receiving the largesse from the government since day one. This is the thing that always kills me about their whole perspective. And it's intensified now that the middle class is receding.
Yeah, but even that
know?
Even that passage, Sandra, where, you know, what are these? They're black bankers, black automakers, irresponsible black people who defaulted on their mortgage and the black poor. That I mean, it, Jesus. You know, so, I mean, how could... And his response is, well, yeah, you may be right. No, no. The response is, duh. Right? I mean, actually, that was your response.
Oh, my God. No, I mean, yeah, but, and so what do you mean it's causing a stir amongst?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no, no. Yeah, I wouldn't do this without I had a clip for you.
Oh, okay.
You're just going to love this so much. It's about 2 minutes long. It is, of course, from Radio Rwanda. And best of all, it's Michael Reagan.
Oh, God, he's horrible.
Yeah, isn't he?
Getting his take on the Tea Party. His comments appearing in Kenneth Walsh's book, Family of Freedom.
This is Megyn Kelly, of course.
The president says that there seems to be a subterranean agenda in the Tea Party movement. This after a guest at a private White House dinner suggested that the Tea Party activists' plan to, quote, take back the country was motivated by their interest in stirring up anger and anxiety at having a black president. Michael Reagan is the author of The New Reagan Revolution and chairman of the Reagan Group. Michael, thank you so much for being here. So this in this book that's being released, again, by Kenneth Walsh, who's a U.S. News White House reporter, he reports that President Obama, back in May of 2010, so almost...
Now, I'm just breaking in here for a minute, Sandra. You notice the framing here? They're going to repeat it three or four times before they ever get to their guest.
Not only that, but, I mean, yeah, no, they do that. It's just so, yeah, you're so right about that. It's disgusting. And that pig is adopted. He's not even Reagan's real child.
No.
Anyway.
No. Right. but you know, they're gonna drill it into Emery and Eileen's head.
God.
And then they're just gonna put the banana cream pie in Emery and Eileen's face when Reagan starts up. So, and you know,
8-101.
Yeah. And you know, Megyn Kelly, hey.
A year ago, was meeting with a bunch of folks and said and told guests at a private White House dinner, quote, this is a quote from the book, that race was probably a key component in the rising opposition to his presidency from conservatives.
Third.
Especially right-wing activists in the anti-incumbent Tea Party movement. So according to this author, President Obama is saying the Tea Party opposition to him and conservatives' opposition to him indeed has race as a key component thereof. Fair?
No, not fair at all. This is about policy, not about skin color at all. You know, I spoke at a lot of Tea Party events. This wasn't about race. This was about the economy of our country. And it's interesting, that same Tea Party went out there and elected Alan West in Florida. The same Tea Party goes to Herman Cain to speak at so many of their events across this country. Many of those people in the Tea Party probably voted for Barack Obama back in 2008,
sure,
not knowing that when he went into office, he was going to take over General Motors. He was going to destroy the economy of the United States of America and make the government the big grand poobah, if you will, of creating jobs, not the public sector.
Listen, let me ask you.
Doesn't that just beat off?
What are you talking about? The public sector?
Yeah, that came, by the way, from our good buddy Dave Nywert at Crooks and Liars.
Oh, he didn't know what he was talking about. He's saying that he's trying to say that the private sector should be creating jobs. They can't even get their fucking simplistic lines together. God, that was horrible, that setup. She said that over and over and over again.
Well,
wow.
But you have to do it in case Emery and Eileen are replacing the hearing aid batteries.
Catapulting the propaganda.
That's exactly what the catapulting the propaganda. Hear.
Raisin brain would say, "Oh my God." Well, I don't know, but I know that felon in Florida snubbed Obama with the light rail thing. What is up with that? Can you explain to me why these states? Like I said, Jerry Brown is happily taking it off.
Well, you know what I did today? I thought that my congressman, Nick Rahal, deserved a letter from me that wasn't about mountaintop removal for a change, and just to let him know that, you know, that we can have a civil discussion. I wrote to him and asked, you know, because Nick Rahal has been in the Congress since God was a baby, you know, 36, 38 years, something like that. Even as a Democrat, he's got considerable stroke. So I wrote and said, you know, dear Nick, since Wisconsin, Ohio, and Florida have all turned down the light rail money, why don't you ask for all of it for West Virginia? And we'll make if you can build it in West Virginia, you can build it anywhere because everything is harder to build here.
Mm.
And so why don't you just ask for the whole $7 or $8 billion? Why don't you ask for it for West Virginia and we'll build a light rail line so that you can get from Bluefield to Morgantown in an hour and a half. And, you know, Huntington to Martinsburg in 2.5 hours. You know, why don't you do that, Nick? And I mean, I'm for real. I mean, I wasn't being a smartass.
This is the same state that destroyed whatever internet infrastructure you guys had, too, right?
You're right.
I mean, infrastructure seems to be a bit problematic for...
Just a little bit. But, I mean, in all seriousness, all that light rail money came out, and West Virginia didn't get a damn dime.
I agree. If, I mean, these people, I think, didn't Wisconsin turn down a whole bunch, too?
Yeah, that's what I said. Wisconsin and Ohio and Florida all turned down theirs.
And Florida.
Yeah. What do you say? I don't think Pennsylvania's turned down theirs. What do you say we run a line that runs from, Tennessee would probably have a fit, but maybe we could convince them because it's good for bringing the Yankees down to go to the Smokies. Maybe run a line from Pittsburgh to Nashville.
Yeah.
Through West Virginia with a bunch of spurs. You know, it would be awesome. We'd like to have it. I mean, you know, because I live in a world, Sandra, where it's a 12-mile round trip to the damn grocery store.
No, I mean, all any sort of public, you know, we're just regressing on that front when it really should be going forward. I mean, the way these gaps...
Well, and you know, Rick Scott's such a liar. Juanita sent me a story...
He's a felon.
Yeah, he's a felon. There we go. Juanita sent me a story today. Apparently, he got sued by a Republican and a Democrat for turning down that money. And of course, the Supreme Court of Florida said, "Nope, that's his right."
Oh, now see, I mean, the state of the whole law thing is really dubious in this country, you know. And of course, that stems from what we're always talking about—the bailout and the Wall Street gimme. But hey, listen. So, interesting that Boehner is talking about. Oh no, the House is going to take back the authority to defend that DOMA.
Yeah.
Okay, but besides.
Yeah, because America doesn't have any real problems that need to be dealt with.
Oh, I know. Where's the jobs, Boehner?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I just want to take that one step over. It's like, oh, wait a minute. When was the last time the Congress took back any of the power that it should all have? I mean, it's conceded so much power to the executive branch. I feel like writing to Boehner and saying, well, can you take the war-making authority?
That was the first thing that came to mind. Yeah, can you do that?
Take it back. You know, if you're able to do this, your dumb ass can do that, too. You know, but anyway.
Well, and there's another Boehner moment, too. Don't know if you saw this, but I can kind of testify to the truth of it because I've been in the congressional cafeteria a few times. And it's and they had these sustainable trays and stuff and plates and so forth for getting to-go stuff. And they were made of cornstarch so that they would go in the landfill. Or actually what they did is they composted them. And you put them in a separate garbage bin and everything. But that was way too liberal for John Boehner. That petty little bastard has eliminated the program and put styrofoam goods back in the Capitol cafeterias.
Styrofoam? Oh my God!
Yeah, polystyrene. Yes.
So passe and so right off. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. No.
Oh God! You know.
Because we can't have none of that liberal green sustainability in the people's house.
Wow! Another thing.
He probably cried.
God, that's horrible. Another thing that struck me is that I forgot where I read it, but apparently, you know, Obama has jumped again and, you know, is offering up $6 billion in cuts. So these people, I mean, are the Democrats this stupid? Because Republicans will just keep pushing 2-week extensions and get $4 billion, $6 billion in cuts. every time.
Until you wind up where they want to be. Yeah, and have you? But have you seen?
What is this?
Have you seen some of the stuff getting hacked?
Oh God! Every time I look at it, I feel. I
mean, you've got your little nieces, and I know you care about them and love them very much. It's kind of. I mean, I know what it's like to have little children around the house, and you're running around trying to make sure that they don't get into stuff they don't have any business in. Poison control centers.
Right.
No, don't bother calling because there won't be anybody there because the Republicans want to eliminate them.
Yeah, no. It's just, and everybody is saying, from these Nobel Prize winning economists to the budget office, is all predicting that, you know, oh, we risk throwing the economy back into a double ditch. I mean, double dip. A ditch, yeah, back into a ditch.
Well, ditch too, yeah.
And it's just kind of like, and then I think about you, because you would respond, well, that's what they want to do.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah. And what incentive, to be honest, Sandra, what incentive do the Republicans have for not doing that?
Well, no, because if we had some normal president in, he would be throwing out huge spending bills at them. You see what I'm saying? I just don't really understand the way that Obama is operating. And I think it's all tied to this $1 billion that he needs to raise, I guess.
Well,
it's easier to step on the people and fuck them over and get your money and hope that the money can run enough scare ads to get them to vote. I mean, I'm trying to figure out the calculus.
Well, I mean, I'm seeing that messaging coming out a little bit out of the Wisconsin business. There are people out there who are saying, hey, Wisconsin, How many of you Wisconsin liberals, Wisconsin Democrats, stayed the hell home in November 2010 because you were disaffected or unhappy with the progress that the Democratic Congress and the Democratic president had or hadn't made? Congratulations. Here's your prize, Scott Walker.
Yeah, and how do you think Ohioans are feeling, too, actually? I think that situation is quite disturbing. But you know what? You know, like I said, I'm just not a huge fan of Obama, but this is guaranteeing that fool getting reelected. I'm sorry. I don't care what happens in Wisconsin and what's happening in Ohio. Obama can get Ohio. Because you think the people are happy about this?
No. I mean, when even Republican members of their legislature are getting pissed off and screwed over,
right?
I'd say that there may be a sea change there.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I don't, you know, they're in so much of their ideological bubble. The overreach is sickening. And unfortunately, in Ohio, they have such a huge majority that they're just rolling this stuff through. But if they think there's not going to be any sort of price to pay, I don't care how much United money comes through. If they're decimating people's jobs like...
Well, have you seen the little fracas going on in Wyoming that Rachel Maddow has been promoting this past week?
No, what's going on there?
Well, in Wyoming, the Wyoming legislature they have a couple of token Democrats in the legislature. Let's put it that way. It's a Republican wonderland.
It's been that way for a while.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah. It's the reddest legislature in the country.
But why do they have two senators? I mean, that's another issue.
Well, yeah. So lo and behold, the Republicans start doing what Republicans do, and they start introducing these anti-abortion bills in the Wyoming legislature. And
they're all coming fast and furious.
Yeah, and but lo and behold, and here's the magic: two Republican members of the Wyoming legislature, who happened to be female, stood up and said, "Stop it." And put the kibosh on one bill, and then they came back and tried to do it again. And here's the fun part. They say, these two women, that they're getting positive reinforcement from their constituents, that women and men are calling and going, thank you.
Well,
because the whole
real world.
Yeah, it is real world, but it's also a function of the fact that there's a lot of people out there on the Republican side, I think. You know, the Eisenhower Republican kind of people.
Yeah, all four of them, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hear you.
Who are calling these folks and saying,
hey,
Yeah, but they're finding their voices because they have been afraid to speak up because, like these thugs in D.C. screaming at the Muslim man, they have themselves been shouted down within their own party. Now, these two women that appeared on Rachel Maddow, they said, you know, we're fiscal conservatives. And they said, we just passed a bill saying we don't want the Affordable Care Act because we don't want the government interfering in our relationships with our doctors. And then they turn around and introduce a bill in which the government interferes with our relationship with our doctors.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, I don't know how they reconcile it. And I don't know how these Republican women, maybe we'll see more of this bullshit, because at the end of the day, the reality of what they're talking about is, you know, revolutionary. And not in a good way.
Well, I mean,
what
they're
trying to do.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, Wyoming's one of those places where if you need an abortion and they've eliminated it in Wyoming, you've got a little bit of a ride on your hands to get to somewhere you can get one, right? I mean, you've at least got a drive or a flight to Denver, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. Maybe there are cracks in the shell.
Well, also though, this Walker bill. Also repeals their law requiring health insurers to cover birth control. Like, I've always thought about these people. The end game is birth control. They want women to not have control.
Yeah, I
want to send them back. I mean, that's what I mean by it being revolutionary. They want to, because if you control that aspect of a woman's life, I'm sorry, but you control the woman.
Yes, you do. And you can send her back into the kitchen barefoot and pregnant, as the saying goes.
It's a horror story because...
Well, I've explained to people on a number of occasions that all of this talk about Roe versus Wade is largely meaningless. Because if you really want to overturn Roe versus Wade, what you want to go after is not Roe versus Wade, if you're a right-winger. Sooner or later, you're going to have to go after Griswold versus Connecticut.
Okay, Griswold. That's right, Griswold. Listen, and that's the thing, and it's sort of like, I don't know what planet, because they never address the economic component. It's like, hello, everyone, not only do you need two jobs, but now you need your kids to be working and pets, too. So, you know, how are you going to be sending women back to the hell of no control over their reproductive lives and then they have to be able to support themselves? I guess the man, the mythical man will do that. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, because remember, Mike Huckabee wants to make sure that we get back to where they're, you know, what he wants is pregnant single women stigmatized like they used to be, by God.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. But, the war on women, the war on poor, the war on unions, it's just the one big war in this country at the moment.
Yeah, and it's not a damn bit of it has anything to do with the economic health and well-being of this country, which, of course, is what they claim it's all about. Texas Betsy just sent me a link from the American Prospect, Governor Walker's assault on women, and just lays it out chapter and verse. Walker's budget in Wisconsin would eliminate Title V, the only state-funded family planning program. That's birth control. That's tests and cancer screenings. It repeals Wisconsin's contraceptive equity law that allows insurance companies to deny coverage of contraceptives, and it gives the Wisconsin Health Department the power to end a program that provides family planning to women and men. And then, of course, as everyone is probably aware by now, the icing on that toxic cake is that Scott Walker, and you know, he's just the poster child for everything that a Republican would like to do if you give a Republican the reins of government. He would like to...
Are you talking about the increased burial money?
Yeah, decreasing burial money. You know, just stack them like cordwood somewhere.
Oh, no. He increased the money for burying destitute people.
No, I've got it backwards. That's right.
Yeah. No, that's what's disturbing, is that we're going to cut every... Because he's also going to pull that Arizona bit where, oh, well...
Yeah. I got that completely backwards. Yeah, this is... somebody get Alan Grayson on the line, because this is the proof of die quicker.
This is it.
Die quickly?
No,
quickly?
I mean,
yeah.
Well, there's no, it's just brazen now. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I think he's one. I don't care. He has to be one term. Does he actually think that this is that this is going to stand? Wisconsin was number two in the country for their school and education system. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Do you think that teachers are going to teach 50 kids?
Well, they will if they want to keep on being teachers. That's the way a right winger thinks.
But it's just absurd. It's absurd. And I guess if you look at it from, you know, our jaundiced view, that's fine because they would like to turn teaching into a job like Walmart, I guess.
That's exactly it. Well, if they could figure out. No. Wait, Sandra. We may have missed the point. It's not that they want to turn teaching into a job like Walmart. They want to eliminate public education. And so if you reduce teachers' salaries to the point that you can make better money being a manager at Taco Bell, then nobody will go into teaching. And then you, as a Republican, turn around and say, well, see, our public education system is failing, and we need to put it back in the hands of the private sector and religion where it belongs. You know, it was a couple of decades ago when Jerry Falwell said that religion needs to be taken, education needs to be taken out of the hands of government and put back into the hands of religion where it belongs.
And, you know, we can top it all off with the, now, this is all really murky because I've read several different points of views about this, but I did this research paper. It was just fascinating on the creation of the housing market in America, you know, around the FDR New Deal period.
Right.
And, I mean, it's like everything is being reversed because, you know, my contention is that they would like to go back to when the housing was a consumer item.
Yes.
And this whole redirecting or reconfiguration of trying to make the mortgage market just a private concern, you know, that's a bit tricky. And it ain't going to be no ownership society, I'll tell you that.
Well, no, actually, Sandra, it will be an ownership society. And my ass will be owned, and so will every other middle class and lower, and especially the lower class.
Well, no, but there's arguments to be made that the mortgage market could sustain just a private model, because that's what Australia does. I mean, Australia, they don't have any Fannie nothing. You know what I'm saying?
No, but by the same token, look at what you got. If I understand from John Fox and a few of our other Australian listeners, look at what you got to shell out to get a house down there. If you want to be near a population center, it's crazy.
Oh no, yeah, they're in sort of a bubble thing. Australia, the Australian housing is definitely overheated and it's just kind of bizarre. But I just mean that they don't have the
they don't have any governmental underpinning, I guess.
Right, and I mean this is sort of what they're proposing, I guess here on some levels. But trust me, do you really want to just be victims of the vagaries of the private mortgage banks again? You see what I mean? The system isn't healthy. I don't understand the administration's thinking on this. Although, like I said, it's really complicated, and I'm not too sure, you know, exactly what's going on. But they're trying to do something with those GREs.
Well, eventually they would like to, like any program that involves federal monetary support, they would like to get their hands directly upon the money.
Well, no, but the thing is, you didn't have the sort of widespread home ownership without the subsidies, though. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And by the same token, though, you did have, I mean, if you want to live somewhere, you got to rent. I mean, because prior to the era that you're discussing, you largely had urbanites living in, and I use the old English legal term in its strictest sense, tenements. Okay.
Well, Yeah, and if you did buy a home, it was, you know, like a luxury item, and you were, like, in old age. It wasn't an investment. It was, like, yeah, anyway. It just wasn't widespread, obviously.
No, you go to any town that's had a major industry, and you go down the main street, and you can see lovely, lovely houses, and you go about two blocks back, and the shacks start. And the lovely, lovely houses were the princes of industry. You know, I can take you just about anywhere in West Virginia, and I can show you company towns.
Yeah.
And those are places where you lived at sufferance inside a company-owned house, and if you if you crossed the company, your ass was out on the street the next day.
Well, I mean, and you know, I'm predicting that they're going to be bringing. Remember that whole idea that was floating around, which was just outrageous, of raising all the inventory to bring the housing market back. You know, destroying all the empty housing.
Yeah.
I predicted that'll be coming back too. No, I don't know, but they're desperate because, you know, I've read reports that our housing market is pretty much destroyed.
And how to bring it back? I don't know.
Yeah, it's, you know.
I mean, and you know what? One of the best indicators of that I have recently seen, and I'm not being facetious, I was driving through one of the little towns near here the other day, and there's a place that's been there for 20 years, and it's a mobile home lot, trailers, double wides, single wides, whatever. Well, they're clearing it out. That's going to be a big empty space soon because they have gone out of business. And the thing is, the reason that so-called manufactured housing caught on here in West Virginia is because it made home ownership a possibility for a whole lot of people. And even that's gone now?
Well, I mean, like, I just think that people have to maybe rethink the whole idea because, to be honest, I wouldn't want to be in some hideous house in Southern California that's underwater. That's not my idea of a good time.
Right, but the thing is, you can't get into a house in Southern California unless you're willing to get underwater, can you?
But, well, I just mean the whole appeal of buying, it's just obviously not what it was. And, you know, renting isn't that bad if you want to be able to move for job possibilities. See what I'm saying? It seems to be more of a downside with, you know,
well, I'll never forget the first time I saw a $1 million house in Southern California. It looked like the house I grew up in that my dad bought in Alabama for $20K.
Yeah, no, it's definitely over the top here.
And by the way, just got an email in from Jay, Australia. He says Australia the most expensive housing in the world, and I have no idea why, except the banks do well out of it, and it is a bubble that will burst.
Yeah, there's this one show that I listen to called Renegade Economist, and it's out of Melbourne, and it's all about their, you know, sort of rent-taking economic system there that's, you know, prime. Because, see, they argue that the whole fall of, what was the prime minister name there? Rudd.
Yeah.
That was all around the fact that he was real close to getting that tax on mining. And the miners got rid of him because they didn't want to pay the 40% tax. That would have brought in huge revenue for the country.
Yeah, John and I have talked about that at some length. I will defer to his expertise.
Yeah, well, anyway, they definitely have some sort of, you know, housing thing going on in Australia. But I don't know. I just don't really know what the housing situation is going to be like in Florida. Isn't it just a wasteland there?
If it isn't now, it will be. Because again, the 8 years of Jeb Bush and Republican tax cutting economics, there's no base left. There's no tax base left.
Well, I mean, I agree that, you know, that they probably need to do something to restructure those Fannie Freddie things, but, you know, I'm weary that of how they want to incentivize it again, you know?
Indeed, indeed.
Anyway, listen, I know you need to move on, so.
All right, well, Sandra, you have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
And I am going right back to the phones. Email just came in from Ron in Raleigh. Here in North Carolina, he says, our first repiglick in legislature since Reconstruction is pushing hard for school vouchers for private and charter schools. There was a debate on the local PBS station today. If you listen critically to holes in this crap, the holes are manifest. $2,500 vouchers to poor people is no better than crapping in their hands and telling them to go get some schooling with it. Yeah, I don't know how many private schools are covered that will educate your kid for $2,500 a year. And yet there sits North Carolina with one of the, well, they refer to it as a public ivy. The University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and the University of Georgia at Athens are constantly duking it out over which is the oldest state publicly funded university. And to take that tradition and that heritage and just throw it away. Throw it away. But presumably, I guess, that's what America voted for in November 2010, right? No, I don't think that is what they voted for. This in from our buddy Andy in Redwood City. In Texas, subject of a previous one of the subjects in the conversation with Sandra, high school graduation rate is 43rd out of 50 states. It is 5th out of 50 states in childhood poverty and number 1 of all states with percentage of children without health care. Only 78% of Texas children are in excellent or very good health, far below the national average. My addition, says Andy, number 1 in air and water pollution among the 50 states. Need I forget, lest I forget, one of the largest state deficits at $28 billion. Texas miracle BS. This is third world. Andy adds, tell Sandra it's simple. Obama is a neoliberal Chicago school, PIMCO's Bill Gross said in today's New York Times. Without Fannie and Freddie, expect mortgage rates to increase on average by 300 BPS or 3% above current mortgage rates. PIMCO will demand higher rates to invest in mortgages without a government backstop. The end of housing for the middle class, thanks to Obama. I know how to bring back housing. You go back to the New Deal's original mandate, 15- and 30-year fixed mortgages to the middle class and below. That's the mandate. No exotic loans, and limit loans to below $450,000. Thanks, Andy. Yeah, the idea of, I don't know, someone like Grumpy John McCain getting an FHA mortgage for one of his cabins in the hills. But it happens. It happens. So we go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
This will be the coolest thing I say this month.
All right. Well, hey, you got a lot of month ahead of you. So
I know, but this will be. Debbie Riddle is proof positive that there is cloning of Nancy Reagan going on, and she is the genetic deficient recessive one that escaped, and they want her back.
Kind of like Robin the Bat Boy?
Yeah, kind of like that.
I got a great quote from Debbie Riddle here for you.
Oh, boy.
This goes back to March the 6th, 2003, and an interview with the El Paso Times. Jude sent this along. Debbie Riddle said, where did this idea come from that everybody deserves free education, free medical care, free whatever? It comes from Moscow, the pit of hell. And it's cleverly disguised as having a tender heart. It's not a tender heart. It's ripping the heart out of this country.
Yeah, that about sums up Debbie Riddle's intelligence.
Yeah, atne ute aitbre, if you one what I aim me.
Yeah.
Jude adds, and yes, she's a Baptist, praise the Lord.
Yeah, so I wanted to say something about the Wisconsin protest and something that people need to, need to keep in mind who are listening. I was listening on conservative radio, and the sentiment there is they want more people on the streets. And here's why. If you think about it, This is like a checkmate to a checkmate to a checkmate. The more and more people that get on the streets that are outraged, since the media is controlled by conservatives, oligarchs, and monopolists, they can basically frame it to a way we're creating gridlock. We don't want the nation to progress. And here's the other thing that you forget, people. It's only been a few months since the last election. They'll frame you and they'll paint you as whiners, complainers from state to state. And I guarantee you, if that's what happened, we do have nationwide protests right now, and it's from state
to
state.
But they will paint that picture no matter the circumstances.
Oh, I know, but it will be faster, Bob. They'll accelerate it even faster. That's the problem.
And the other thing, of course, and we've already seen it, David,
yeah,
is that the right-wing for-profit media are also painting this as, they're dangerous. They're union thugs.
Right, right, and that too, and they're continuing to amp up that rhetoric as well.
Yeah, what else have they used? Let's see, slobs. They've used slobs, and they've used the phrase other breed. In other words, the people protesting in Wisconsin aren't even human. You know, and it's all of that. That's why I said last night what I did about Jon Stewart referring to the protesters smelling like ass. And
yeah.
I was reminded, David in Tennessee reminded me after the program that, he said, you remember when some right winger, said of Michael Moore that Michael Moore looks like hot dog smell?
Yeah.
Or that he looks like he smells of hot dogs. I forget which rotten son of a bitch it was that said that. But, you know, how nice that Jon Stewart could get on that side of the argument. Thanks, John. Thanks.
And here's the other thing that when we were talking about, here it goes again, Bob, the circling of the union and the thugs. This is why I'm on the train. I know you're not on this train, but this is why I'm on this train to the Horn audience. This is why I'm on this train. I'm on the, they're going to Jimmy Carter, or they're going to try their hardest to Jimmy Carter or Obama train. And this is why. You have the whole birther certificate thing coming up. You know, Phil Berg was on Tom Hartman's video show that he does on RT. And Phil Berg is the attorney for he was the attorney for trying to bring forward with the 9/11 truth nonsense that they were trying to do. But now he's on the birther train. And I noticed how Phil Berg is framing the issue. And I noticed how, you know, that article I sent you from the MSNBC website. You see the name of states that have this bill on. When I read Maine, Bob, I was like, holy shit. I mean, they're moving fast on this whole birther thing. Now, here's the thing that people need to understand. And they're like, well, that's just crazy. Yeah, but again, the Republicans and the GOP and these crazy hate mongers, Bob, they play the odds and they play to win. You don't understand that. All they need is one state. One state they pass and it's an effing victory.
Well,
I've got a
story here from MSNBC. States question Obama citizenship with legislation, and
right.
The subhead on it. At least 11 states have measures that want more proof that the president was born in the U.S. And, of course, Georgia will be the next one. Because legislation has been proposed to question whether or not President Obama was born in the U.S.
And that's what I'm talking about. And I'm just wondering, and I hate to be the cynical bastard that I am, or the hyper-cynical bastard that I am, I'm just wondering when West Virginia is going to do that, too. Because if Maine,
we're almost out of time. I'm not sure about what one may have been introduced. But you also have to remember that while we have a hard time sometimes telling Republicans from Democrats where coal is concerned, the Republicans in this state are absolute lunatics. They are. I mean,
we're getting there. Don't worry. We might beat you.
Well, I think you will. Because our legislature is fast running out of time.
Yeah.
And I don't recall, although I'll do a search after the show, I don't recall having seen anything about a birther bill being introduced in West Virginia.
Wow.
And it's odd though, considering that 23% of voters in the 2008 Democratic primary in May 23% of Democrats. We're not talking about 23% of the electorate. 23% of the people who voted in West Virginia in the Democratic primary said they did so because they didn't want one of those in the White House.
Mm.
That's West Virginia.
I do have to say, and I mean, I come from a picture of what my family reports back to me of people in the military. The uncertainness in the military, especially older people in the military, they're not liking what they see in Obama, because you got the bombardment of Fox, you have the bombardment of talk radio, you have the bombardment of op-eds. I don't care what anyone thinks, but that's why I think they are attempting to Jimmy Carter, because it would be, here's the other thing, Bob. I know you think that Obama, they're going to have him in for another 4 years. I don't think the Republican and the GOP care anymore with, number one, Citizens United, and number two, with the fact that they control almost 99% of all media.
Why would I?
I mean, I'm at that point.
But
right
you,
now.
You mentioned right-wing hate radio, and I love this breaking story coming from Tablet Magazine.
Oh, yeah, that.
It turns out that those right-wing callers to right-wing hate radio, they're canned, they're cons, they're shills, they're dummies, they're actors. Tablet Magazine writing, if the actor passed the audition, he would be invited periodically to call into various talk shows and recite various scenarios that made for interesting radio. He would never be identified as an actor, and his scenarios would never be identified as fabricated, which they always were. In other words, right-wing radio knows that the people listening to it are morons, and they don't want them on there. Instead, they hire actors. And
you think about that, and you think about the people that call, and you always wonder, all right, is this person a call-in person?
But it also fits perfectly, David, with what we know about the right wing paying people to go in and troll liberal blogs, for instance. Right? Because we know they do that. But what's really funny is that this service, it's called Premier On Call, and it's for fake callers to right wing talk radio. That's a service offered by Premier Radio Networks, a subsidiary of Clear Channel, and just happens to be the people who syndicate, there you go, Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Randy Rhodes, you know. And it's a con.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, when it concerns about media and propaganda, the other thing that I want to say where I believe the right wing is completely decimating the left in terms of is the email department. Holy shit, Bob. My dad, all he does is he gets emails from his friends telling him what Obama and this administration is doing. And my dad always asks, where's your source? And there is no source. It's just a fucking email. And this is what everyone is sending.
Source? They don't need no stinking sources. They're Republicans. They just make it up, just like these calls. I mean, listen to the pitch. Listen to the pitch for Premier On Call. We supply voice talent to take, make your on-air calls, improvise your scenes, or deliver your scripts. Using our simple online booking tool, specify the kind of voice you need, and we'll get you the right person fast. Unless you request it, you won't hear that same voice again for at least 2 months, ensuring the authenticity of your programming for avid listeners. It's a con. Oh, my God.
Did you catch what Michael Harrison said? He knows.
Oh, Talkers Magazine?
Oh, he knows. He knows. He knows the con. He knows the game. He had to come out with his really vague statement. I heard him on the radio when someone was interviewing him, and ever since I knew that that magazine was really, really heavy on the right wing, but when you listen to his when he talks about Israel and Palestine, you just want to do the Star Trek face palm. It's sad, man. I mean, the fact that people get you know what it is? It's a fetish. It's a fetish that people can't see another side, and they just constantly have to ram their point home like Israel, 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 and or teabagger, 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 Constitution, Constitution. And it seems to me that since the media is pumping this nonstop, I don't see a good outcome from this any way you look at it. Wisconsin is painting.
Well, wouldn't it be fun, David?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be fun if we had enough of an infrastructure?
Yeah.
To actually let America know that when they tune in to a Limbaugh, a Hannity, a Beck, that they're being had. That person who sounds so pitch perfect, you know, I wish I was smart like him. That he's an actor. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about doing what we do here. And because you don't see any you don't see any of the liberal talkers I respect being mentioned in that article.
Right.
I'm lucky. And I speak only of myself.
Yeah.
I'm lucky. I get to have long-form conversations with people like you,
mm-hmm.
with people like Sandra, with
mm-hmm.
people like Juanita, Cossack, and everybody I talk to on this program is intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot say that for right-wing radio.
Yeah, and I mean,
let this serve as a sort of bellwether for folks. If you happen to be listening to right-wing radio and you hear somebody who sounds really intelligent,
yeah,
it's not real. It's an act. It is literally a bought and paid for act.
And the other thing is that all in right-wing talk radio is if you listen to any of these shows, they insult the hell out of their callers. They mock them, and they can turn on you in a second just to get that reaction and that rise from their audience. Like, ain't that funny? And they don't understand that the joke is on them.
Maybe that's why I'll never be a big time. Terrestrial radio, the talk radio superstar, because, and this is not me blowing smoke,
right?
I have tremendous respect for people who pick up the phone and call this program, because that means you care enough about what's going on here, and the conversations that we're having, and you feel confident enough in your own knowledge that you want to add to the quantum of understanding. And we behave that way as liberals, David, because that's how liberal brains work.
Right.
We don't repeat talking points.
Mm-hmm.
We actually process information. And I've had people say, for instance, Bob, your calls are too long. And I try to explain to them that this ain't anything you're used to listening to. That if I was opening the microphone because I felt like I needed that, you know, if my ego was so goddamn big that I felt like America needed to hear me spout off,
mm-hmm.
I probably wouldn't be doing that. I'd be running for office or something. But the as a liberal, for me, the only meaning this has is in the degree to which we interact with one another and let the rest of the world who wishes to hear that they and we are not alone. I don't want to give anybody marching orders. There's no sense in giving liberals marching orders. We don't do marching orders. You know, I'm frankly surprised, David, that there has been as much cohesion in Wisconsin as there has been.
Mm.
And that is an astonishing credit to the people in Wisconsin. Maybe once your fanny is in the fire, you get a little sense of purpose. Maybe that's what it is.
I think it's so transparent now that everyone sees it. It's just we as a people in this country are in panic mode, and I guess it's a lesson we're going to painfully learn, Bob, to be completely prepared the next time around, if there is a next time.
Well, I hope there's also a lesson, as mentioned in the conversation with Sandra, that not to fall prey, not to fall victim to the right-wing messaging. Because I am convinced, because I'm so hopelessly paranoid that I probably just need a Thorazine dart in my neck every morning.
Yeah.
Believe me, doing this will do that to you, David.
I can imagine.
Someday you may find out. The whole ennui with Obama, and I get frustrated, we all get frustrated, and we'd like for him to do things differently, and we want a pony. We don't want this. We don't want the lousy, messed up state of affairs. You know, fix it now, goddammit. We elected you to be a wizard.
Right.
That was ginned up by the right wing. That was ginned up by the right wing. I get emails every day from people who talk about Obama the same way we used to talk about George Bush. They're not the same person.
Yeah.
Obama screws up. And we as liberals don't give him the pass that the right wing gave him. But he ain't Bush. It's not the same thing. We so easily fall prey to right-wing messaging, and we don't have enough common sense to realize that, oh my God, look out there. The right wing is massaging and manipulating the message 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, you know, come on, the story broke early this week, whatever, that colonel in Afghanistan was using military psyops on members of Congress. Remember that story, David?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Those guys get out of the military, and they often go to work in places like Washington, D.C., where they take what they have learned, and they transfer it over into the private sector, largely within the right-wing sphere. I mean, come on. The consulting firms that worked with Hunton and Williams on the Chamber of Commerce campaign, you think that in those consulting security firms that there weren't some military psyops types that had been hired along the way? Of course there were.
And yeah, I mean I'm there with you. I think the fact that
I mean that's why I kind of blinked with the whole business with the TSA and the pat downs. That thing had libertarian right wing written all over it. And, you know, here's a little secret. When we got off the ship and we got to the airport at Fort Lauderdale, we had to go through security. Now, there were four lines. We were in line number two or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
My whole little family's standing there. We'd take off our shoes and belt and, you know, because they don't want us hanging our shoelaces, you know, because they don't want us hanging ourselves in security screening.
Yeah, that's a good reason.
I walked through the metal detector. And the guy stops me and says, okay, just stand still. My pockets are empty. There's no fun to be had. So I stood still, and the guy very gently, very politely, very efficiently, very deferentially patted me down. And then I went and put my shoes and my belt and my shoelaces back on and went to get on the plane. Well, Agnes got diverted through the x-ray screener. And then she was out of hers before I was done with mine. And I'm not sure which kids went through which unit. But, you know, they know what I do, and they know the conversations we have here, David.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody was standing there saying, Daddy, I've been violated, Jesus!
Yeah.
They weren't doing it. And neither was anybody else. And I don't feel like a good little German for having subjected myself to it, because, by God, I wanted to get on the plane and fly the F home.
Right.
Sorry, this turned into a rant, and I didn't mean to. I'm not doing it to you, but I think you get a sense for why I say what I say.
Yeah.
The whole TSA thing was made-up right-wing bullshit, because they got to hang it on Barack Obama.
And you know, the thing is that so many people on the left, they fell for that in an innocent way. But the thing is that all you have to do is imagine what would happen if this was the private sector TSA. Do you think, honestly, that they would stop the pat downs?
No, I think if it was the private, if it was the private sector, shit would be turning up missing. You know, I've got a story here that's been hanging around in the stack for a week now about a cop, about cops who were caught on tape talking about stealing a man's stuff because they caught him with a bag of weed. It comes out of Lansing, Michigan, and officers with the Omni Drug Task Force executed a search warrant on the home of Rudy Simpson in June 2008, and they found a little bag of weed and a half of a pain pill. He'd actually been prescribed the pain pill. So it just turns out that it's all on tape, and while they're talking about what to do, the guys on the Omni Drug Task Force start looking around Rudy Simpson's house.
Mm.
And they said, you know what we can do? We got him on a drug charge. We can steal all his shit. And so they were carried it out left and right, but the problem is the guy was recording, he was doing a music recording, and all the equipment was open and all the mics were hot. And they got caught in this conversation. They left the house that day carrying out a 52-inch flat-screen TV, a DVD player, two computers, a camera, and a whole bunch of DVDs. Now, privatized security screening in airports, it would be similar to that.
You know, that's the whole thing about it. I mean, is that the security that we have now, I mean, when people made I would love to know the person who originally put up that video, if he was like he worked for a social engineering company or something like, something to that effect, the guy that made the "Don't Touch My Junk" video.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's hard to tell because of, with the rise of YouTube.
Dude turned out to be a libertarian.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
But if you
pay attention to this stuff, if you pay attention very closely to language, you can figure these people out pretty fast. They'll use words like liberty, in concert with other terms, and you, oh wait, look, that's one of those. You know, I was reading an article earlier today, David, from Mother Jones. Juanita had sent it to me.
Mm-hmm.
About the disappearance. It was called First They Broke the Unions and Then They Broke the Town. And it's about the little town of Twilight, West Virginia, which is slowly being destroyed by Massey Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I read down the comment thread, and lo and behold, this same handle, you know, it's never a human being's name. I mean, if you go down a blog post and you see Bob Kincaid, that's by God me. Okay?
Right.
Unless it's somebody spoofing me. So when I post, it says Bob Kincaid. But there's this person who calls herself Due Diligence, who just trolls the thread all the way down to the point that it becomes, you look at it and you go, oh, screw it, and click and turn off the pen and go away from the tab and the story. And so I got to where I was feeling my oats this morning. And every time I see her, I go, don't feed the trolls. And accused her straight out of being, you know, a right-wing plant. Because they are. They are everywhere. I'm not trying to make anybody paranoid. I don't want anybody going out looking for chemtrails or anything. But this kind of Republican psyops, black ops, whatever you want to call them, is very real in our country, because the right wing knows crystal clear and all the way to the core of its filthy little being that they cannot compete in the marketplace of ideas.
And you know, that's the thing right there, is that most people, they shrugged it off. You know, people on the left, when the right wing was on the internet, and we were like, I've said this before, we were 10 years ahead of them. We have no more time window of being ahead or advanced of them. They're passing us right now.
Yeah, right. They've caught up and they're going past.
Here's the thing about it. They're mastering. This is like they're cyber chain letters. And they've mastered the internet to the point of how they mastered talk radio. They've rigged it in such a way where they can countlessly just build up these conservative sites with all these op-eds that they get for free, that they're able to pay their contributors,
and they're able to get everyone just constantly revved up about an issue that is really insignificant in their lives, which is, you know, I got to hand it to people who can do that. That's an amazing talent to continue to keep getting people revved up over stupid stuff like, you know, the Freedom Fries.
No, Freedom Toast.
I mean, that's just one issue.
You know, when I think about the volume of red French wine and white French wine that the right wing poured down the gutter, you know, I was on the air at that time. I was going, guys, please, I'll dispose of it for you. Send it to me. But they poured it down the gutter instead. Goddamn idiots. David, it's been a wonderful conversation. You have a good weekend. Yeah, one more thing. Okay.
One last thing before I go.
Yeah.
Everyone should contribute for the horn at bobkincaid@gmail.com. Send your money, send your contribution, and keep the horn on the air.
Thank you very kindly, David, because I think in the course of the program, we started out needing 32 contributors. We now need 31.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers for that Jerry Lewis-type telethon you're going to do, Bob, on Ustream.
It's going to be
all the guests and everything.
Hey, you know, we ever get the... I don't know. Maybe we'll have a conversation someday. You should see this gizmo. There's a gizmo out there that could absolutely change the way we do things if people want to play that way. Do split screens with people's faces from Skype and all kinds of fun stuff. It's really cool.
We'll have to talk about it later.
All right. Take care, David.
All right, later.
Bye now. Thanks for making the pitch, David. I really appreciate it. I get tired of making it myself. I really do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob Kincaid.
Yes.
I called you about a couple days before you went on your cruise.
Okay.
And I'm a third-generation union person.
Oh, yeah, okay. I remember now.
And, Bob, I've never met you, and I don't think listening to you over the last 3 or 4 weeks that I've ever had any more in common with a person I've never spoken to in my life.
I take that as a high compliment.
Yeah, I guarded embassies for President Carter because when I left Central Illinois in 1977, Caterpillar was still kicking it out. Farm Supply was going, Bun Coffee Makers, Sangamo Electric. We had John Deere over in Iowa still kicking ass. Quad Cities was still kicking ass. Peoria. And that's the society, the industrial-based wage economy that I would have jumped on a grenade for then. And would probably, unfortunately, in the future. I spoke to you and I told you, Bob, that my grandfather was the president of the National League Umpires Union.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. His name is Al Barlick, Bob. And he was the home plate umpire in the, I think it was the 68 World Series with the Cardinals.
Oh, the Cardinals. That was Cardinals and Tigers?
I think you're right. And
Bob Gibson, my God, if your granddad was the home plate umpire with Bob Gibson firing at him, that takes a lot of courage to stand back there.
Yeah, Bob Gibson, I named my birds. I had three finches, Bob Kincaid. I had Lou Brock, Bob Gibson for a finch, and I also had the guy from the Boston Red Sox.
Yastrzemski?
Claudia Yastrzemski. And in 1990, Bob Kincaid, I was in Hawaii with the 1st Marine Expeditionary Brigade still defending a country that I thought was there. But I wasn't sure because I was gone so much. You know, when you go to Taiwan, you go to Honduras, and you go to Guatemala, and you go to Paraguay, and you go to Uruguay, and you go to Argentina, Bob, you kind of lose track of what you thought was America. And then in 1990, my father said, Mark, on ESPN, you might want to watch that Saturday if you're interested. Your grandfather's going in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So I showed Bob Kincaid, a southern white female, like a southern white male that you are, how much I loved her and how much I love you, and how I see no difference. I've never contemplated a difference. That I said, Chris, you need to may want to give this a shout out here, Chris, on the TV. I said, there's my grandpa Al Barlick on ESPN, and there's my dad, Chris. Check that out, isn't that cool? And with my daughter Caitlin O'Neill, Caitlin O'Neill, Duncan, Hankins, Duncans from the Tennessees, and the O'Neills from the Chicagos. They told the O'Neills in the teens and the 20s, Bob, you either pay us or we're going to burn you down. And the O'Neills said, you're going to have to burn us down. So they did. And they moved into a church in Gainesville, Florida, in the roof of a church, and they ended up opening a fruit shipping business, Bob, in Miami in Coconut Grove called the O'Neill's Fruit Shipping. And out of respect to the Southern culture, I named my daughter Caitlin O'Neill Hankins because she was a Duncan. You see, Grandpa Duncan was from Murfreesboro, and his wife was from Kentucky. And Grandpa Duncan said, son, let me show you something. I got something in the back room. And Pop, he went to his bedroom. I didn't watch him like you. I'm not a micromanager. And he came back with his gun from World War One. And he said, what do you think of that, son? His hands were shaking from age. And I said, Grandpa Duncan, I said, hang on, let me show you. I pulled out a combat commander, Bob, because I was a cop in Miami. And my gun was 3/4 of an inch shorter with a Parkerized finish. And I fired motherfucking distinguished expert at the City Miami Police Academy for Metro Dade in City Miami. And I said, Grandpa Duncan, we've got a good choice of guns here. And it wasn't north or south. It was just love for a fellow American. And I would let the woman know in California that Neil Bush has a predilection for teenage females. And his wife was on Larry King Live telling Americans, I'm about to tell you something. They jeopardized my life. And we haven't heard from her lately and her children. The Neil Bush...
No, they tried to destroy her. And it was, yeah, because that was after Neil Bush's the famous Ty Hooker escapade. I think we're talking about the same thing, aren't we?
I'm sure we are, Bob. I'm sure we are. And it doesn't take much to besmirch a person in this... And Neil Bush owns for Juanita and for any Americans that have the balls to be honest with themselves, they own Ignite, and that's the privatization of education. You know, they.
You're absolutely right.
George Bush, the last burglar of the Watergate White House, grabbed a black Department of Education person from Dallas or Houston and made him the front face for Chevron Oil, like Condoleezza Rice, until we found out the boat had her name painted on it. You see, Condoleezza Rice even realizes she's black now, and but she won't come out and say that. And probably...
Are some things you can't expect of people after all, but yeah. No,
you know, I for Juanita, so she'll know, my mother is a Dirksen from Illinois, and she... married my dad, and my dad's a dark-complected, handsome guy. Looks like Herb Alpert. He's a good-looking guy. They actually asked my dad if he'd be interested in being a model back in the 60s when there weren't models like there are. Everybody's a model now, or a Model S. And in any case, my dad kept working at the power plant. And then I talked to my mom about a year ago, Bob, and she said, you know, I kept asking her, just gently, and she said, I think your great-grandmother might have been maybe even an Indian. We're not really sure. But your dad didn't talk to her because he was embarrassed. And my Caucasian father grew up like a lot of, I suppose, Caucasian fathers in the projects, whether they're in West Virginia with the projects of the coal miners or the projects of Indiana or wherever, Brooklyn. And it didn't really matter to me, but I found it kind of odd that there was a guy down the end of my street, Bob, in about 1964, as I caught my breath riding my bicycle up a hill back to my parents' house that they were renting and in Springfield, and I leaned on his fence to catch my breath, and my parents always told me that he was a World War II veteran, and, you know, I thought that was kind of a respectful thing. They didn't say to be respectful. They just said that guy down in the street there at the intersection. And I lean on a fence, and I get real dark in the summer. I'm about 6'3 and 260 pounds, and I have fists with some scars on them, and I speak English relatively clear, but I don't hate anybody. And I'm not, you know, and I was a platoon sergeant in Desert Storm, not because I asked for the job. But this guy looked at me, and he said,